38 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by International Star Registry. Three adults and one child died in an accident on I-76 west of Fort Morgan this morning. Colorado State Patrol Master Trooper Ron Watkins said the mishap took place about 8, involving a 1995 GMC Yukon.
A 1995 GMC Yukon traveling eastbound on I-76 lost control, drifted off to the left side, overcorrected, and ran off the right side of the roadway. The vehicle rolled approximately 2 3/4 times.
Watkins said even though the vehicle seated 5 occupants, some 11 people were riding in the SUV. 2 people were airlifted to Denver area hospitals, 3 others hospitalized. Watkins says it isn't known if the occupants of the Yukon were wearing seatbelts. 2 legislators are introducing a plan for fighting the high cost of prescription drugs. Representative Laurie Clapp, a Republican of Littleton, and Representative John Salazar, a Democrat from Manassas, suggest that people buy their drugs in bulk, since that's a way to reduce costs on most other items. They say there are 26 states in the country using some type of volume drug buying program. If passed, the bill would basically create a pool of state agencies to buy the drugs, thereby saving money. Seating at the Pepsi Center is going to be made more accessible for fans in wheelchairs. This is following an agreement between Kroenke Sports Enterprises and the Colorado Cross Disability Coalition. The coalition sued Kroenke Sports in 2002, saying the company didn't follow an agreement to make different areas of the Pepsi Center accessible to wheelchair-bound people. The new agreement will make an area on the center's lower level open to wheelchairs and will make some ticket windows easier to use for those people using wheelchairs. Along with owning the Pepsi Center, Kroenke also owns the Denver Nuggets and the Colorado Avalanche. The White House announced yesterday that President Bush will appoint Susan Schwab of Maryland and reappoint Dianel Alves of Texas to 3-year terms on the Air Force Academy's Board of Visitors. Schwab was dean of the School of Public Affairs at the University of Maryland before Bush selected her last summer to work for the Treasury Department. Aviles runs a Houston engineering firm. He's a retired general in the Army Reserve and a contributor to the Republican Party and GOP candidates. In the wake of the sexual assault scandal at the Academy, the board has plans to meet more often and monitor the school's activities more closely. Democratic presidential candidates plan a light day as New Hampshire voters are casting their ballots in a primary where breakthrough wins mean everything. Massachusetts Senator John Kerry is the solid favorite, but former Vermont Governor Howard Dean promises that he'll spring a surprise. The first votes cast in 2 tiny towns after midnight gave an early nod to retired General Wesley Clark. 3 more U.S. troops were killed today, another wounded in a roadside car bombing west of Baghdad. Also, 2 CNN employees are dead and another wounded after an ambush today in Iraq. In Washington, President Bush said this morning there is no doubt that ousted Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein was a gathering threat to America and others. There's another computer virus on the Internet to look out for today. It's called MyDoom, and it's said to be spreading quickly through people's emails. Rick Russell at Rice University's Information Technology Department says it actually does 2 things.
It forges the return address on the email, so it looks like the virus came from someone who, you know, may not be related at all to who actually generated it. And it includes an attachment which, if opened, immediately infects your computer.
The virus showed up yesterday afternoon. Russell says if you receive an email and are not familiar with its address, play it safe and delete it. He also says if you have updated your virus signatures using the update feature in your antivirus software, you should be protected. However, for those not updated, your system won't be able to detect that virus. New figures on consumer confidence have beaten Wall Street expectations. The Conference Board, a private research firm, said its index of confidence leaped to 96.8 in January. That's a rise of more than 5 points from the month before and a half point greater than Wall Street forecasts. Investors are now looking to tomorrow's statement on interest rates from the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee. Stocks sharply lower in afternoon trading, though. The Dow is down more than 76 points, the Nasdaq down nearly 30 points, and the S&P 500 down more than 9.5. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche get back on the ice at the Pepsi Center tonight as they face the Edmonton Oilers. Avs beat the Oilers when they last played in November. Denver Nuggets are off tonight. They're getting ready to host the Chicago Bulls. Nuggets lost to the Minnesota Timberwolves last night. This Valentine's Day, give your sweetheart an amazing gift that will be remembered forever. Name a star after them. Call International Star Registry at 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:05.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hey, what are you doing on the computer?
Believe it or not, I just finished our taxes.
Come on.
Yeah, with TurboTax software.
Are you sure we did it right?
Yes. TurboTax asks you simple questions, and it puts the answers on all the right forms.
Well, what if we made a mistake?
Well, it checks for errors and missed deductions, and calculations are guaranteed accurate.
Whoa.
I know. So now I can print our return and mail it, or file it electronically, and we're done.
I've always liked that TurboTax.
Really?
TurboTax. Taxes made easy, taxes done right. Available at a retailer near you. See box for guaranteed details.
KNRC News Time is 12:06. Time to check with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is a service of HP Business Printers, and a pretty quiet drive out there right now. We do have a couple small glitches. Westbound I-70 between Vasquez and Brighton had a stall earlier. We're still going to see some immediate slowing. Watch for that. We also do have a problem with high wind. This is going to be on Highway 93 between Boulder and Golden. Watch for that, especially if you're in a high-profile vehicle. Buy an affordable HP ColorJet 1500L now and get your business to experience the benefits of printing in HP Color. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC Traffic.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Going to feel a difference in temperature today. High of 43. Yesterday we topped out in the upper 20s. Just a few clouds. But the clouds thicken up for tonight down to 24 and stick around for tomorrow. But warmer, 49 and above average temperatures again for Thursday. 51 with just a few clouds. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
Under mostly sunny skies, it's 42 degrees. KNRC News Time is 12:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 12:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC.
12:07, 7 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I am yours until 3 o'clock. We have a wonderful show planned for you today. This is my buongiorno. I'm welcome back from Venice, and I'll tell you all about my trip. Oh, what I did on my summer vacation. We are going to be joined a little bit later in the show by Brian Moss, Channel 4 investigative reporter. He's got a great story about how your tax dollars are at work when cops using sex chat lines on City Time and on the City Dollar. We'll be talking about that later. Stephen J. Cannell, the very successful television producer and novelist. He has a new book out called Vertical Coffin. He's going to be with us live in studio, and he'll also be at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. I just want to give you a heads up. We have got John and Abigail Adams, replicas thereof, tomorrow from the Chautauqua Performers. They are bringing to life America's first true political couple. Stanley Greenberg on Thursday, he was Bill Clinton's chief pollster. He's written a book on the two Americans, our current political deadlock, how to break it. You've got the reds and the blues in there, equally divided. And Friday, I'm really looking forward to this one. Friday, we're going to have Kevin Phillips on American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. Kevin Phillips is a big Republican star, and he is a lot of Republicans adored him, and here he is taking a very hard, eagle-beagle-eyed look at the Bush family, American Dynasty, Aristocracy, Fortune, and the Politics of Deceit in the House of Bush. You don't want to miss that. That's on Friday. I want to talk to you about Venice and Italy and all of that as we get going, but with us is Channel 4 investigative reporter Brian Moss. Brian, thanks so much for joining us today.
Enid, my pleasure.
Tell me about this juicy story. I'm just back from Italy. I got back yesterday after flying for about 30 years, it felt like. And I pick up my newspaper today, and I said, this has got to be a Brian Moss story before I even read the you didn't have, I don't know if you had a byline, or did you? I can't remember. But anyway, they mentioned you, and I thought, aha, this has his fingerprints all over it. Tell us, what has been going on in the police department? What high crimes are being committed?
Well, that's a good question. We ran a story last night on News 4 at 10 about how we had learned that these Denver police cell phones in District 1, which is in northwest Denver, they had been found to have thousands and thousands of minutes of airtime used to call these sexually oriented chat lines.
Now, let me just stop you right here. I thought these 900, are you talking about sort of 900 numbers?
Not necessarily.
Because don't they also require a credit card? Don't they also bill you whatever the cost of the phone call is? They also bill you $4 or $5 a minute?
Well, the way it works these days, Enid, is, and I'm no expert on this, but the way it works these days is there are a lot of these lines now where it's not a 900 number, where you call in through a 303 number, actually.
Okay.
And then once you're in the system like that, then you end up using your own personal credit card at some point in time to pay for whatever you're getting. But in the meantime, you're obviously racking up cell phone minutes while you're on the phone, although it's actually a local call, if that makes sense.
Wait a minute. You're racking up cell phone minutes, but the way those sites make money is they want to get you on the big bucks charges. So are
right.
those charges being charged to the Denver Police Department or only the cell phone? In other words,
all that we reported was that the cell phones were being used to call into these lines. We don't have any information that there were any charges beyond that, but that thousands of minutes showed up, and on many different phones, not on one or two, but on a high number of these cell phones.
So how did you find this out? Did you have a good tip about it?
Yeah, this began with a tip, and obviously evolved into a story. And we talked last night to Chief Whitman. He said that they've been investigating this for a couple of months. That he said they found out about it through a audit of the cell phone bills for District 1.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like they have a pretty full-fledged investigation underway to try to figure out how many people are involved in this, how much it's cost the city, and so on and so forth.
Has it occurred in other parts of the city besides this particular jurisdiction, the Northwest section, or is it only that the audit, the routine audit, happened to target the Northwest section?
That's all that they seem to have so far, is that this involves District 1. However, as a result of this, the police department, according to Chief Whitman, is going to initiate a review of all the cell phones in other districts, just to see that everybody's in compliance with police policy. Obviously, that policy does not allow you to spend hour after hour calling a sexually oriented chat line. So they are going to be looking now at...
Well, maybe they were on their lunch hour.
Well, that's possible, but then it would be a pretty long lunch hour. As we reported last night, some of these calls lasted well over an hour, and you're talking about a huge volume of minutes. You're also talking about calls into a number of different of these chat lines.
How many people do you think were involved? Was it one? Was it coming from one person's cell phone?
No, it's multiple cell phones, numerous cell phones actually in the district, as we understand it, have been used for this purpose.
But are numerous cell phones available to, are they only assigned to one person?
Well,
or can one person get his hands on numerous cell phones?
That's the question that the police department is now trying to answer. Is this just one lone person who has some kind of a habit who is using a lot of different phones, or is it multiple people who are using the phones? And we don't know the answer to that question. I think that's something that the police department is probably trying to figure out at this point in time, too.
How are you assessing a dollar value? If you were talking about cell phone minutes, an hour call, what are you talking about? And also you want to put the time value on, because presumably this is not happening on a cop's lunch hour when he's supposed to be doing something else.
Yeah.
He is dallying on the telephone.
Yeah, and that's the right question, but it's an incredibly difficult and complicated question to answer because of the way that the city police department's cell phone plan is set up. And rather than get into the nitty-gritty details, which would frankly be a terrible bore, all I can say at this point is it's very hard at this point to put any kind of dollar value on it as far as we know, but you can certainly safely say these are valuable minutes of police department airtime, and one way or the other on the back end, taxpayers end up paying for this one way or the other, whether it's for a huge flat rate plan or whatever. So I hope that answers your question.
In the interest that you can never be too cynical, or as Lily Tomlin said, no matter how cynical she becomes, she can't keep up. Are you convinced that when you hit the department with what you had, they had actually been undergoing an investigation and a review, or do you think that it was the first that they'd heard about it?
I believe they actually have been looking into this. I really do believe they have been looking into this, and I'm not sure precisely what paths that investigation was going down, but I do believe, from what a number of different sources told me, that they had been aware of this and looking into this.
How many hours of cell phone usage are you aware of, and over what period of time?
We reported thousands of minutes, and in recent months, I think we're generally talking about what we can say is probably within about the last 6 months or so. And I can't narrow it down much more than that, and the police department has not narrowed it down much more.
When you say thousands, how many thousands? Don't know.
Just know from multiple sources that we're talking thousands of minutes of airtime have been used from multiple phones to multiple sexually oriented chat lines on these police department cell phones.
All right, let me take a devil's advocate approach here. Boys will be boys. These are cops, macho mentality. At least they're not shooting people. They're only dreaming of having sex with them in these virtual chat rooms. How big a deal is it? It's better than they running around shooting black teenagers.
Well, I think you probably have to look at it in the landscape of, like, every department in the city. The police department's needing to tighten its belt, do more with less. We hear a lot about how busy the officers on the street are. But when you hear this, if these calls were happening during patrol time, it makes you question how busy some people perhaps really are.
Well, Brian, I have a great idea. You know, we have John's TV and Hooker's TV.
Mm-hmm.
How about putting these guys up on John's TV? Virtual Johns. I mean, there they are. They're spending a fortune. I have ridden with them. I have ridden with them on East Colfax when they're trying to bust the hookers who are so pathetic. They're the lowest of the low, $20. They don't even look like hookers. It's not your class. It's just so schleppy and depressing. These are people, some of whom have psychiatric mental illnesses, substance abuse problems, addled in the extreme, and impoverished. And here come swooping down on these busts, a half a dozen unmarked cars per person that they haul off to the pokey, and people who are out on the street trying to turn a $20 trick who have no hope of being able to get themselves, spring themselves out of the pokey. So, we could put them up at the Brown for what it's costing. And there they are. And then they're busting the Johns. Meanwhile, they're amusing themselves. They're amusing themselves on these chat rooms, these sex chat rooms having virtual sex, so they don't ever have to sell themselves on East Colfax.
Isn't that better?
Less muss, less fuss, no possibility of sexually transmitted disease.
Yeah, and the key questions that have yet to be answered are, how many people was this? Like you said, was it just one guy who kept getting different cell phones? Was it a number of people? Those questions need to be answered. And
we're assuming that it was a guy, actually. That's the assumption, that it's a guy, not a gal, huh?
Although these lines are set up so that, whatever persuasion you are, you're certainly welcome and your money's good.
Right, exactly.
So I'm not sure that matters, but probably the big issues here are the unauthorized use, the inappropriateness of this, and time spent on chat lines that ultimately taxpayers have to pay for.
Well, I'm with you on that, but I really think that if we ever find the culprit, and I have a feeling we might never find the real culprit here, but if we do, I think he's got to go up on John's TV.
You might want to call Chief Whitman.
Don't you think that that's the appropriate? And the other thing.
They don't pay me to think.
I'm going to start a movement. We put him up on John's TV. That's it. Doc, and whatever the police department official punishment is, if you actually find the culprit, and I have a feeling that maybe we aren't immediately ever going to find out who that person was. But if we do, that person, the person or persons, goes up on John's TV. The other thing is, and we have a persistent listener, Eric, and every time one of your wonderful stories breaks, he calls up to give me hell, and he says, you know what, it's the same old story about people malingering on the public dime, not that we don't want those stories. He said, but what about the corruption in high places that is a lot more subtle and a lot more damaging? Any chance that we can see those stories too?
I think we do those kinds of stories all the time. I mean, I think we do those types of stories all the time. I mean, I can't recite chapter and verse right now, but goodness gracious.
I hope you're looking into the Governor Owens marital stories.
I've certainly heard about it.
Yes, we've all heard about it.
I don't think that you minimize the importance of the use of tax dollars. If a guy like Eric feels that it's okay for these things to be happening, he's certainly entitled to that opinion.
No, I don't think he does. But I think what we're also not seeing are the big stories where huge corruption goes on. Bottlenecks, for example, in the development agencies in town, the stories of backroom deals the details of which are so complicated and subtle that they're very tough to nail down,
yeah,
and that they affect lots of people in ways that we don't often recognize until it's way too late.
Well, that kind of stuff. I don't totally agree. I think that the media in this town and the newspapers and the investigative units at television stations and so on and so forth are pretty aggressive and do the very best they can to expose the kinds of things that you're talking about. They may not necessarily be as memorable always as people talking on sex lines, but I think those stories are done.
Well, you always do a wonderful job, Ryan Moss, investigative reporter at Channel 4, and this is a very juicy story in every single way. So as you have more news, we'll be happy to share it with everyone. So thank you so much. Is there more? You have something more planned on this particular story?
We have a follow-up coming at 5 o'clock today on News 4.
Yeah?
And we'll see where things go from there.
You want to give us a kind of a clue as to the follow-up?
We're talking to elected officials about this, who are hearing about this, too, and seeing what they want to have done about this.
Okay. Well, I'm voting for whatever the penalties are. The additional penalty would put these folks up on John's TV.
Okay.
All right?
Enid, welcome back, and thank you.
Thank you. Brian Moss, okay. Investigative reporter for Channel 4. He does a fabulous job. Thanks, Brian.
Bye.
Bye. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. I'll regale you with stories of Italy and Venice and observations and Are We Ugly Americans as we continue.
AM 1150.
Overload. Pleasure overload.
KNRC.
Dear smokers, my name's Megan, and I'm here to ask you to stop smoking. My daddy used to smoke. He was always promising to quit. He finally did. But then it was too late. He had cancer, and now he's dead. I'm only 10 years old, and I miss my dad. He was my best friend, and now he's gone.
If you're ready to quit smoking, we can help. We're the makers of Smoke Away, a product clinically tested and proven to eliminate your cravings and have you smoke-free in just 7 days. It's all natural and nicotine-free, and best of all, it's guaranteed to work or your money back. Call us today. Thousands have already quit using Smoke Away. Shouldn't you?
Please quit smoking.
Call now for your risk-free trial. 1-800-219-2704. That's 1-800-219-2704. Money back if you aren't cigarette-free in just 7 days. Call toll-free. 1-800-219-2704. That's 1-800-219-2704.
Some people prefer the right wing. Others prefer the left wing. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC. Our diverse lineup of talk show hosts features more viewpoints and perspectives than any other Denver talk station. Join Greg Dobbs from 6 to 10 a.m. Bill O'Reilly from 10 to noon. Enid Goldstein from noon to 3. Doug Kellett from 3 to 6. Dominic and Bill from 6 to 9 p.m. Lionel from 9 to midnight, followed by Alan Combs. Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Greg Dobbs. Join me every weekday morning from 6 to 10 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now, back to Enid Goldstein.
1224 on the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live I am back from Italy, and I have many tales to tell, and it was really a wonderful trip. A couple of things, though. I came back to find out that a wonderful friend had died. And you may know him if you're an MSNBC watcher or if you're in the media, you might know him. His name is Jerry Nachman, and he was a legend. He was the first guy to put me on the radio, and that happened in San Francisco when he was a news director at KCBS Radio in San Francisco. He loved my writing, and he wanted me to do commentary for what was then the KCBS News magazine, and that's where I first met Jerry. He had this extraordinary career, let me say. You know, usually if you're in broadcast, you're in broadcast. If you're in print, you're in print. Some people make the crossover, but not very many. And furthermore, very few people make the crossover from being talent to being an executive. He did it all. He was behind the camera. He was in front of it. He was a general manager of a big television station and radio station in Washington, D.C. He was the CBS vice president. He was a writer. He had a column. He was a broadcaster. He was an intrepid reporter. He wrote screenplays. He wrote television series. He was the editor of the New York Post in New York City, the executive editor. So, I mean, he was a big cheese going up against the New York Daily News, who at the time owned by his father-in-law, who was the chairman of the board of the Tribune companies, you know, the Chicago Tribune, all the properties, all the, and at that time, I believe they owned the New York Daily News. He was colorful. Sometimes you'd see him on Nightline. He was, when he died, the number two guy at MSNBC. He had a show and then was diagnosed with cancer about a year ago. And I understood that he had really successfully undergoing treatment for the cancer and was in a pretty good place. But I understand that he was found dead. The housekeeper found him dead, I guess about a week ago, as soon as I left town. And that was that. He had some health problems. He was somebody, I always like to say, when you met him, he was short and he was very portly. And you were not going to confuse Jerry Nachman with George Hamilton, let's say, or Cary Grant or Mr. Cutie Pie. But the minute he started talking, you forgot what he looked like. Because he was funny and he was smart and he was savvy and he had great stories to tell and he will be missed. Jerry Nachman, 1946-2004. Dead January 21, a week ago, so I'm very sorry to hear this news. I came in to find out a lot of news, but I do have some good news about Greg Dobbs. He's undergone abdominal surgery. It was emergency abdominal surgery, as many of you know, and he is home from the hospital. He is recuperating. It's a slow recuperation from that kind of a surgery, but it sounds like things are moving in the right direction, and he is on the mend. So that's really the good news. Those of you who are concerned, and apparently Boyle said something today on his show, Peter Boyles, I don't know what he said. If anybody heard it, let me know. But my understanding is that Greg is progressing in a really good way. Now home from the hospital after about 18 days, the surgery, and then they had to do another surgery. But things are really moving in the right direction. So that is great news. That's a good news on Greg Dobbs. And in the meantime, a lot of people are filling in for him, among them T.R. Reid. And I have a lot of people to thank while I was gone. I want to thank T.R. Reid, Tom Reid from the Washington Post. He is the Rocky Mountain bureau chief for the Post and had been the bureau chief in London and also in Tokyo. So very accomplished and very well traveled and very sophisticated. Thank you, Tom Reid, for filling in. And my friends, the Style Twins, Judy and Evelinda, filled in, and I understand they did a wonderful job. And also Jerome Davis filled in and did a wonderful job. So thanks to all of you. We've been having some technical problems here at the station, and so bear with us. Stephen Cannell, the really successful TV producer and now novelist, is going to join us later in the broadcast. He has a brand new book called Vertical Coffin. He's going to be at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. We'll be talking to him. It's a return engagement. He's always lots of fun to talk to. The Rockford Files, the Commish, a lot of those were his productions. So he has many tales to tell. Well, Venice. Where do I start? The food was not as wonderful as I thought it was going to be, but in every way, I had a fabulous time. I'd called in some reports. Now, one day, I guess the cell signal broke up, but I have a funny story to tell you. But we didn't know what the outcome was of the Iowa caucuses, so I had to call the show to find out what happened. And Tom Reid was very generous and filled me in on all the unexpected details. And Venice is 8 hours ahead of Denver. So about the time that I was beginning to become well lubricated at dinner and had way too much vino is when I'd want to think about calling the show. And so I hope I sounded coherent, but how can we tell for sure? And then we called from Harry's Bar. Harry's Bar is a legendary bar in Venice. It's where Ernest Hemingway and other literary figures used to hang out. Now they charge tourists a fortune. Oh, and here's something you need to know when you go to Venice. There's the price you pay if you're a local, and there's the price you pay if you're a tourist. And they're not the same prices. And negotiating is accepted in Venice. So you always want to try and negotiate, even if you're a tourist, whatever price you can on anything you're trying to buy. So here they are charging us astronomical amounts of money for the Bellinis at Harry's Bar. And Bellinis are made with Prosecco, which is an Italian champagne that is really lovely, or a sparkling wine, let's say, but it's really lovely, and some white peach juice. And then they charge you, what was it, 15 euros? Well, a dollar is a euro is worth about $1.35 or $1.30 or $1.40, somewhere between $1.26 and $1.40, depending on where you go. And so you can imagine. So a round of drinks is an astronomical amount of money. But anyway, there were Italians all around, and next to us was a British couple. And I asked him what he did. He said, I'm an attorney. And I said, what kind of an attorney are you? And he looked at me and said, a very good one. And I wanted them to talk about their feelings about George Bush and about the State of the Union address had already occurred, and I wanted to get people's feedback. And the Italian that I was talking to, who was just gorgeous, we'll just call him Rodolfo, but it wasn't. It was Antonio or something like that. He was, but half of his friends were in favor of Bush's policies, half were not. The British couple were violently anti-American on the issue of going to war, anti-Bush on the issue of going to war. So we put them on, and then I think the signal broke up. A few days later, there were seven of us traveling, a couple who stayed in a different place, and then the five of us, we were in two different hotels. So here is the couple, Monty and Christopher, and they're at some other restaurant somewhere, and they're just, you know, inches away from the next table, and suddenly they're all sharing maps, and the next table's a British couple, and they start talking. The British couple says, where are you from? And they say, oh, we're from Denver, Colorado. And the British couple said, oh, there's an influx of Coloradans. Why, we were at Harry's Bar the other night, and there was a Colorado woman, and we were on the radio. So, ha, 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 we laughed, because it's a small world. Venice is about 3 miles. It's only 3 miles. It's impossible to find your way around, but somehow you do. I mean, there are all these tiny, narrow streets that seem like you'll get lost, but eventually you do find your way around, and then you begin remembering that you've been looking at the same shop window. So I think for a while there, we were going around in circles for a few days before we figured it out. It was cold. It's a bone-chilling kind of cold. At the same temperatures in Colorado, you're not nearly as cold as you are in Venice. It probably has to do with being on the water. When you first come into Venice, and we came in on a water taxi. Everything is on the water. You don't cross the street. You're all on the water, the Grand Canal and then the Rios. And so you have to get your head screwed around to figure out the geography. But the Vaporetto, their bus service is on the water, and it's called the Vaporetto. Or the Vapo, and you get on, it's pretty reasonable to do it, and you can go everywhere. We were trying to go one place, and we wound up going to another island entirely, the Lido, which for years I'd read about. This is where playboys for decades have been hanging out at the Lido, and there you do have cars, and there you have palm trees, and on that day, so here it was, sunny most of the time, but very cold, and one day it snowed, and you had these flurries, and it made Venice even more beautiful in a kind of ruined beauty way. The trouble with Venice is, having lived in San Francisco for so long, I feel like I can speak about this with a little bit of authority, and that is, San Francisco is beautiful, but it can't exist without Oakland, which is not so beautiful, except in certain parts. There are nice parts of Oakland. So I have this small handbag that I once bought in Spain that's so tiny you really can't get anything into it, and once in a while I use it, but there's only one way to use it, and that's to have a big handbag filled with all the stuff you really need in the trunk of your car, so then you can, after you use all the stuff that's there, you can then hit the trunk of your car closed and put your car keys and maybe a lipstick, and that's about all you can fit into that little nice little bag. And that, I call that big handbag I keep in the trunk my Oakland, because it's like San Francisco, which is in danger of turning itself at times into a theme park, and Venice too, I think. It is beautiful. It lives very much in the past, although, and I didn't see any signs of contemporary art going on very much, or workshops or cooking classes or the things that would keep it current. it's sort of living on its past glories. Nothing wrong with it. But the population has declined by about half since the floods in the middle 60s. So the population was in about 120,000. It's now about 65,000. It's an aging population. Venetians are very sophisticated looking. I saw more fur coats than I've seen anywhere. You just can't wear them here. But there, they wear them with impunity, and you kind of need them. And they are very stylish. It's a very... you see a certain kind of chic that you really don't see in this country, except maybe if you go to places like New York. Just because we're very casual. People don't dress even for the theater. But there, even if they're dressed simply, there is a great elegance. And you certainly can pick out the tourists from the natives. The government is having to subsidize some of the Venetians because once the conversion happened from lira to euros, everything doubled in price. And it has become very expensive even for the natives. So to keep people there, the government is looking into subsidies and in some cases does do subsidies. We were lucky. Christopher, one of our party, was friends with somebody he taught with in Rome, and Frank's wife, Liesl, is an opera singer. So we were invited to their home in Venice. They live in a palazzo on the Grand Canal. It sounds grander than it is. They lease it. I mean, it's not that they own it. But it was certainly interesting to go to someone's home. And they had us in for drinks one night, and another night they had us in for dinner. And it was just great to see how people who live there really live. It's fun to get lost in Venice. It's fun to go shopping. It's fun to see how another culture tackles homely activities. For example, how do they solve certain problems? Any John you go into, there's a different delivery system for the toilet paper, for example. In Italy, if you went into five different Johns, there are five different ways that they deliver the toilet paper. Here we have, you know, usually they have rolls of it. I don't know. I find this interesting. I think it's an interesting byproduct of travel. Or in the wine shop one day, I watched them staple up the wine. We bought some wine for the hotel, and you know, we were having a very good time. They stapled it up. Their staples are littler than ours. Their tape is narrower than ours. Their glasses for water are smaller than ours. The Coke containers are not as big as ours. In Europe, or in Italy anyway, the Coke cans of Coke that you normally, you know, that they were serving on the plane and that you would be served anywhere, are smaller than ours. And I thought, you know, I was thinking about this epidemic of obesity that we have in this country, and maybe that's one reason. Everything about America is so big. The tape is wider. The staples are bigger. The Coke is bigger. Just these interesting kinds of observations that you can make while traveling. The masterpieces that we saw, so incredible. It almost is too much to take in on a week's visit. It almost becomes like wallpaper. But I will add more as we continue. But that's a little bit of the highlights of Venice. Everybody said the food was going to be so fabulous. It was okay. I won't say that it was fabulous. There were some good meals that we had and some very good dishes and some good meals. But the best food was the stuff that you can buy in the bars. It's called cicchetti, like tapas. Not very expensive and very delicious and often, you know, and kind of more homemade, not so fancy. So those are some of the highlights of Venice. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. 12:38, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 42 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by General Motors. Four people, including a child, were killed today in a rollover accident on I-76 west of Fort Morgan. The Colorado State Patrol says there were 11 people traveling in the 1995 GMC Yukon. The seven occupants who survived the crash were all hospitalized. Two legislators are proposing a bill that would fight the high cost of prescription drugs. The two representatives, one a Republican, the other a Democrat, think buying drugs in bulk would save money. The bill would create a pool of state agencies to buy the drugs in bulk, and that would save the cash. Kroenke Sports Enterprises and the Colorado Cross Disability Coalition have reached an agreement to make seating at the Pepsi Center more accessible to fans in wheelchairs. An area on the center's lower level will be open to wheelchairs, and some ticket windows will also be easier for people in wheelchairs to use. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche host the Edmonton Oilers tonight at the Pepsi Center. The Avs are coming off their 5-3 win over the Pittsburgh Penguins on Saturday. When the unexpected happens, OnStar gives you and your family the safety and security you deserve. Just push a button and OnStar advisors are ready to help. OnStar, always there, always ready. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 12:39.
Do you know the story? It's about a war, the very worst kind. It ripped apart our country, set American against American, North against South, free against slave. Now John Brown's Body, the newest production of the Denver Center Theater Company, brings to life the story of the Civil War. You meet Lincoln and Davis. You hear from Southern belles and Northern ladies. You sit across from slave traders as well as freedom fighters. You see the world through the eyes of a Yankee soldier and his Confederate counterpart. John Brown's Body transports you to the most troubled chapter in our country's history and gives voice to the human experience behind the facts and dates. John Brown's Body plays January 29th through February 28th at the Denver Center Theater Company. Do you know the story? The whole story?
Visit denvercenter.org or call 303-893-4100 today for your tickets.
KNRC News Time is 12:40. Time to go to Darren Copeland now in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report is brought to you by the Colorado Non-Game Income Tax Checkoff. Off freeways, we got most of our problems of Alameda Parkway at Rooney Road, as well as Bowles and Pierce injury accidents. Another accident coming in 64th and Clay. We do got a big problem. It's going to be a westbound I-70 at Peoria. Oversized load, broken axle. It's on the shoulder, but it is kind of peeking out into traffic. So just make sure you watch for that slight delay in the area. We'll be there throughout the afternoon. Links don't have annual incomes. Check line 30 on your state income tax form and help the state's non-game threatened and endangered wildlife. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Lots of sun out there today, just a few clouds, much warmer than yesterday. High of 43. Yesterday we topped out in the upper 20s. Later on tonight, the clouds roll in down to 24 degrees and warmer again tomorrow, mostly cloudy. High of 49. And for Thursday, just a few clouds, lots of sun and 51. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly sunny, 42 degrees. KNRC News Time is 12:42. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
I'm Evelinda Irwin.
And I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live.
Even if you're not born with great style, you can buy it.
Just like we do. And this extends to our homes. Element, Denver's newest furniture store for urban home furnishings, accessories, and artwork, meets all our style needs and will meet yours, too.
Element has multifunctional furniture to maximize your space in a condo, apartment, loft, or smaller home. The clean lines of Element's furniture for today's urban lifestyle will work with what you already own.
You'll love their eclectic mix of styles, all presented in a way you can envision in your own home.
Prices are affordable, with lamps as low as $100 and sofas starting at about $1,000. Interior design services are available.
Element is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 6, Saturday, 10 to 7, and Sunday, 1 to 5. Element is located at 77 West 9th Avenue, a half a block west of Broadway in the Golden Triangle. 303-825-3770.
Element. Your lifestyle, your home, your element.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's main indexes are stuck in losses. The Dow is down 76 points. S&P 500 losing 9. The NASDAQ is down 30 points. Stocks in defense contractors are on the defensive today following earnings reports from Lockheed Martin and Raytheon, both companies swinging from losses a year ago to profits last quarter on increased military spending. But both firms also lowballing earnings projections for 2004, predicting higher pension costs will pinch the bottom line. Right now, Lockheed Martin stock is losing more than a dollar and a half. Raytheon shares are down 80 cents. The parent of United Airlines says its bid to get out of bankruptcy the first half of this year is well on track. UAL reporting its losses last quarter narrowed from the year-ago period during which it filed for Chapter 11 protection. Still, total losses last quarter amounted to just under $500 million. Stock in UAL is up 3 cents. I'm Andrew O'Day in the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
12:44 on the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. We're going to be joined by Stephen J. Cannell. His new book is Vertical Coffin. He's going to be at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. He'll be live with us in studio. If you're just tuning in, you missed Brian Moss's investigative report, but you can catch it on Channel 4 at 5 o'clock on cops who appear to be using company phones, cell phones, to indulge themselves in sex chat hotlines. So there are all these thousands of cell phone minutes, not to mention all the time that's involved. Some of these calls went on interminably. I think one of the punishments should be that these cops have to go on, if any of them are caught, they go on John's TV. That's it. We're talking about a lot of things, and let me just continue because I want to make some more observations. Having been in, just returning from Venice, so this is my welcome home from Venice. Got back yesterday late. It took 9 hours just from Frankfurt. So Venice to Frankfurt is a couple of hours. Then there was about a four-hour layover, and then 9 more hours to get to Denver. So it takes a long time to travel, and the plane was supposed to go at 6:30 to flight, so the water taxi came to the hotel at 5 o'clock in the morning. Very, very cold. Supposed to be a very, very cold day yesterday in Venice, and lots of fog, and we get into, it's like very ghostly, like apparitions. We get into the water taxi, which is a speedboat, and load our luggage in. There are now five of us, because two went back a day early. And now we're speeding through the Grand, we got to go through the Grand Canal and then on into the open waters to get to the airport at Mestre. Well, it was so foggy that here we are zooming along, zooming along, zooming along. Then he opens up the lights in the back, in the rear of the boat, and he says he can't go any farther. It's too foggy. Kind of like that California Thule fog where you can't see anything. What do we do now? He zooms us over to something called Piazzale Roma, which is where you can get a taxi. So we get off the boat into two waiting taxis, zooming us to the airport. The plane leaves at 6:30. It is 6:15, and the flight is already closed when we arrive. But somehow we managed to get on the flight, maybe because there were so many of us. And we made it. So all of this, it's a very long day, is what I'm saying. Short, but if your parents or your grandparents, your great-grandparents or great-great-grandparents came over from the old country, it took them days and days and days to do it by boat. It's so much faster now, but it's not, when, you know, after you spend a whole day flying, it's not quite as fast as you might think it is because people are always jetting over to Europe. The point I want to make about that is if your family came over a long time ago from the old country with the old traditions and they weren't able to go back because in those days it was so expensive, they came, they never went back again, your family incorporates all these old traditions in the new land, in America, that nobody does in Italy anymore. If you go to Italy, it's no longer the country of your imagination. It's very modern. It's very high-tech. It's very techno-savvy. It's sleek in design in a lot of places. Also very ancient in other places. We saw churches from 500 churches that would rise magically from the water that you could actually walk to on the back end. But they just, the front of them rise dramatically from the water. Your eye isn't used to it. But I was thinking about a lot of Italian families where they have maintained the old traditions, and a lot of people in Italy ceased maintaining those old traditions for a long time. It's like places in New Mexico where they still speak a 15th century Spanish that is no longer spoken anywhere else in the world because they were so remote, and that's when the conquistadores came over in the 1500s and people living there in these very remote areas. So I've told that in very remote parts of New Mexico, they speak a kind of Castilian Spanish that is no longer spoken anywhere. I have to say, one woman in one of the tours, I went to the Venetian ghetto, and the word ghetto starts in Venice, where the Jews were there from, I think, about 1300 or 1400 onward, and there are all these synagogues, and somebody made the observation that they didn't want to come to this country because Americans are young and they're naive. And if you look at the faces of Italians, you see something different. Everybody's now dressing the same, although there's a little more formality there, and great good taste, really a lot of chic. But, you know, so they're not running around in sweats like we are a lot too much of the time. But the men look different, and the women do too. You don't see as much plastic surgery, at least I didn't see so much of it. I saw almost none of it, really. The men have a different look. And so that remark that this kind of dour woman made about America, she didn't want to come to America because we're too young, we're too naive, sort of stuck. There's something that takes life more seriously in countries that have not had it as easy as we have. I think we're more cavalier about life. Oh, well, you know, there's always tomorrow. Well, you know, you do have that. There's always domani in Italy, but they're more serious. Wars have been fought on their soil. Life has not always been easy. They're more engaged by, I think, by ideas. At least that's the impression I have. And there is a different look as a result. Now, here I am in Harry's bar, and here are, you know, these good-looking guys and their friends all sitting around, and they were able to talk at the drop of a hat very intelligently about American politics and in a language not their own. That, I thought, was impressive. And the other thing I noticed, and this gets us to the point of politics here. I haven't been to Europe in a couple of years, three or four, I guess, and there is a very different feeling in the air about toward Americans. In my other visits to Europe, you know, we were the people who liberated them, who have helped them, who instituted the Marshall Plan. They were grateful to us, and Hi Yank was how it went. Not now. Now they're. I saw signs Bush is a gangster. One of us in our party, we were so eager to get somewhere, we sort of jostled the guy who happened to be on crutches, and he looked at one of our members and said, "Go home." And so you feel something else. The security at the airports for Americans, if you're going to a flight to the USA, is lethal. And it is really, I think it's been a factor in not making us a lot more friends. If you fly, I thought this was interesting, if you're flying domestically, I don't know if you're, it seems like the flight attendants have turned themselves into Nazis. You got to be sure everything is under the seat in front of you. If you've got any carry-on luggage, it's got to be securely tucked in. And God forbid, if it hangs out a half an inch, that flight attendant is going to give you hell. Not on an international flight. There was we had stuff just scattered all about it, and they're a lot looser. They are, you know, easier about it. Being in Frankfurt yesterday in the airport was really intriguing because depending on what gate you were near, you'd see people who were, you'd hear the flights called for Addis Ababa. You'd hear flights called for places in Poland. You'd hear flights for the Soviet Union, African countries, all kind, you know, and you'd see people who looked like they were almost starving from Africa in very, very skinny and impoverished in one part of the airport, and then other people maybe on their way to India in another, and it was just a United Nations. But the feeling I had is that we are not so well regarded. And on the plane, I was looking at a piece that I think James Fallows did on an interview he had conducted post-White House with Bill Clinton that it had taken me a while to get to. Now I had time to read it. And Bill Clinton said, our moment at being central, he said, is fleeting, and that we can't alienate our allies. And this was an interview done about 6 months ago, I think. We can't alienate our allies because our dominance, a fleeting moment in history, as soon as China and India come into their own more. That's it. They're going to knock us out of the box. And I thought about that and saw how people were responding to Americans now, and there really is something very different in the air. They're tired of our high-handedness, and sometimes in traveling, people can be short-tempered. Sometimes traveling's not so easy. It's lots of fun, and it's great when you get there. But traveling can be hard. It can stress you out, the jet lag, the time differences, the language differences, the cultural differences, and so on. And even though tourism is the main industry of Venice, which is why ultimately if they don't start to renew themselves in some other way, they're just going to be a stultified theme park. Tourism is very important. They mostly can speak English. It's a great delight to be there. But there's an undercurrent that I was feeling, and I think everybody else felt it too, that none of us had felt before in previous trips to Europe. This is not a good sign. And I was interested to see that the David Kaye report came out while I was gone. Bush, how he's explaining that away. So as we continue, I'm going to be talking more about that. New Hampshire, I was astonished at the result of the Iowa caucus. So politics, we'll find out about New Hampshire tonight. More as Enid Live continues on the Lucky Tuesday edition, AM 1150, KNRC.
Sit very still.
Don't fidget while I talk to you.
You won't want to miss a word. AM 1150, KNRC.
Hi, I'm Enid Goldstein. Get up close and personal with the Colorado Symphony in the only concert hall in America where the music literally becomes the center of attraction. The CSO is offering KNRC listeners 20% off tickets in the Parquet and Mezzanine 1 sections of Betcher Concert Hall for all Masterworks and Super Pops performances. These seats put you practically in the middle of the orchestra. You can watch the conductor's every move and hear the majesty and force of the music build before you.
Join the Colorado Symphony Orchestra and Principal Pops Conductor Doc Severinsen on January 30th and 31st for a celebration of the 20th anniversary of the CSO Chorus in a program including Pops, Jazz, and Broadway. Tickets available at all King Supers Tickets West outlets and online at www.coloradosymphony.org.
And to get up close and personal with the CSO, call 303-893-4100. That's 303-893-4100.
You know how I've said you're my shining star?
Yes.
Well, happy Valentine's Day. Open it.
Oh, wow. You named a star after me?
It's the best Valentine's gift ever. For $54, International Star Registry will record your star name in book form in the U.S. Copyright Office and send you a personalized gift package. Call the Star Registry at 800-282-3333 or visit starregistry.com. That's 800-282-3333 or starregistry.com.
Valentine, you're my star.
The KNRC Community Commitment.
Imagine a center of peace where people come to learn the special ways we are different, so we can celebrate the wonderful ways we are the same. Support the Imagine Peace Foundation and attend their dinner and silent auction Saturday, January 31st at 6 p.m. at the downtown Denver Marriott. The honored speaker of the evening will be Dr. Arun Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi's grandson and founder of the M.K. Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence. Register online at blacktiecolorado.com and be part of the vision to Imagine Peace. When the unexpected happens, OnStar gives you and your family the safety and security you deserve. Just push a button and OnStar advisors are ready to help. OnStar, always there, always ready.
AM 1150, KNRC is proud to continue a Denver broadcast tradition. The State of Colorado, produced in conjunction with the Denver Press Club and Rocky Mountain Reflections. The State of Colorado is where Greg Dobbs hosts a panel of Denver journalists discussing the major stories of the week every Friday morning from 8 to 9:30. It's the most in-depth analysis and perspective on Denver radio. The State of Colorado is brought to you in part by Denver Center Attractions and International Optique. Friday mornings at 8 on AM 1150, KNRC.
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
12:57 on the lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. This is my first day back from Italy. Jack Parr just died. He was the host of The Tonight Show, one of the early hosts. He was 85. He left when he was at the top of his game, dead at 85 after a long illness in Greenwich, Connecticut. Mick calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Well, Benevento, Enid, good to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I spent a few months in Venice long time ago, you know, waiting tables and washing dishes and stuff like that. That's definitely one of the classic cities on the planet, and all. I know that they've had a lot of problems with the rising water table and a lot of water damage to some very, you know, incredible architecture over there. I certainly hope they're still doing some of the reclamation. That
oh, I'm sure there are. There's the Save the Venice Foundation, and we were told that it could be high tides, that it could be what they called aqua alta.
Yeah.
So I brought boots along, and it really wasn't too bad. But they've got the system where they raise the sidewalks. They've just got these risers, and you just walk along those. But it really didn't happen. One day, a little bit, but not much.
Yeah, I'm sorry that you didn't hit up on the best food. Did you get over to the mainland very much, Mestre and Mira?
No, everybody said Mestre was like Walmart, but I don't agree with that. I would have liked to have had time to go exploring Mestre because you know more about the luxurious part of the city if you see the part that keeps it going, the industrial part, and I would have liked to have seen more of it.
Yeah,
but we don't have much time. Tell me, is there anything that you called about?
Well, I just wanted to say I was listening to what you were saying. You know, Italians are very you know, very emotional people, and they'll let you know. They'll tell you exactly how they feel and all. When I was in France and in Italy in particular, back in the early 70s, people were very welcoming, even though they, you know, the Vietnam War was going on at that time. And my dad fought in World War II, and, you know, especially in France in particular, they just, you know, in the southern part of France, in wine country and all, I like to call it, they opened up their houses to us.
Oh, yeah, they were very grateful, but there's definitely a different feeling in the air now. Mick, I'm going to thank you for the call. We're out of time in this hour. Two more hours of Enid coming up right here on AM 1150 KNRC. Later in the broadcast, Stephen J. Cannell is going to be joining us. He has a brand new blockbuster out. We'll be talking to him. He'll be live in studio in the next hour. Politics, politics, and more politics. Some extremely troubling revelations. I'm Enid Goldstein, and this is...
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 1 o'clock.
Good afternoon, mostly sunny, 42 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by the network of 17 John Elway Auto Nation showrooms. A rollover accident on I-76 west of Fort Morgan this morning has claimed the lives of three adults and a child. According to the Colorado State Patrol, the 1995 GMC Yukon lost control, then overcorrected and rolled multiple times before winding up on the side of the highway. Master Trooper Ron Watkins of the CSP said the SUV was stuffed well beyond capacity.
The most significant thing about this particular crash is that that vehicle is only designed for five occupants. There were 11 in the vehicle.
Watkins says there's a lesson to be learned from this tragic accident.
Only put as many people in the vehicle that you have seatbelts for. I've seen crashes like this before where everybody was buckled up and they walked away from it. You know, this particular vehicle was just had to be just jam-packed when it's only designed for five passengers and we have 11 people in it.
Watkins says they don't know yet how many, if any, of the occupants were wearing seatbelts. The seven people who survived were all hospitalized. Fort Carson officials are making plans for the homecoming of 12,000 soldiers who are scheduled to return from their duties in Iraq in 6 to 8 weeks. Events being planned, such as parades and dances, will go on sometime during the spring after the soldiers have had some family time at home. The Army plans to keep tabs on how everyone does after they get back. The Colorado Springs business community is also planning some events to welcome back the soldiers. It's estimated that the soldiers will put about $200 million into the Colorado Springs area economy throughout the next year. A proposed measure would create an academic bill of rights promising to keep classrooms at state colleges free of instructors who would bring in controversial topics that don't relate to course studies. Students would also be graded based on what they know of the subject, along with being free of a hostile environment created by their professors. Critics say the measure would put the state in charge of creating and controlling the curriculum, not the college or university. The measure also addresses the use of student fees for neutral viewpoint uses. Television talk show pioneer and host Jack Parr has died at the age of 85. Parr served as host of NBC's Tonight Show from 1957 to 1962 before making way for such names as Johnny Carson and most recently Jay Leno. His doctor, Isidore Rosenfeld, says that Parr's health was failing recently.
He wasn't doing well for the past year. He'd had some neurological problems, and I knew that he was failing.
The talk show legend is credited with developing and refining the art of the late-night talk show. Parr is credited with being the most imitated personality of the broadcast age. Fellow talk show host Dick Cavett says Parr had a unique style.
Critic Kenneth Tynan, writing about Parr, once said, if he's on screen with someone else, you don't watch the other person. You realize you're watching him.
Parr also helped launch the careers of such Hollywood icons as Woody Allen and Liza Minnelli. New Hampshire is in the political spotlight today as voters in the Granite State cast their ballots in the Democratic presidential primary. Their choice could play a big role in selecting who takes on President Bush in this year's election. Senator John Kerry has received a big jump in support in the latest Reuters MSNBC Zogby poll. Yesterday, the poll showed him in a statistical tie with former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, but today the Massachusetts Democrat is enjoying a 13-point lead over Governor Dean. President Bush is again defending the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq, saying today there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein was a gathering threat to America and the world. He added that the search for weapons of mass destruction, the primary argument for the war, will continue and that he has great confidence in the U.S. Intelligence Committee. Meanwhile, Iraq's Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani has demanded direct elections for Iraq's interim government. Ayatollah Sistani has indicated that he will listen to the assessment of a UN team on the feasibility of holding direct elections now for the interim government. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan says that he's ready to send a team to Iraq.
I have decided to send in a mission that will undertake this task. I hope they would also have the chance to talk to a large number of Iraqis, and I really hope that their presence and their efforts will help the Iraqis to come to a consensus on how to take the transitional process forward.
Mr. Annan added that he's looking for security guarantees from the U.S.-led coalition. On Wall Street, stocks continue lower at this hour. The Dow is down more than 60 points, the Nasdaq down more than 28, the S&P 500 down more than 7. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche at home tonight against the Edmonton Oilers. When the Avs and Oilers last played in November, the Avs skated away with a win. John Elway is going to the payoffs. They'll help pay off your current vehicle and get you into a new 2004. Same low, no-haggle prices, same price match, plus a money-back guarantee. John Elway, honest. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 105.
Does your accounting firm really know you, your business, and your goals? At Earhart Keefe, Steiner & Huttman, we spend time with you to learn about your business and your goals. As Denver's largest locally owned accounting firm, EKS&H has been serving companies for over 25 years. The roots of the success of EKS&H are built on a corporate culture where service is our priority. If you're looking for an accounting firm that is progressive and will really spend time with you, there's only one name that should come to mind, EKS&H. At Earhart, Keith, Steiner, and Hotman, we'll support you with integrity to help your business flourish. Call us at 303-740-9400. That's 303-740-9400. Or visit us on the web at EKSH.com. EKSNH, Certified Public Accountants and Advisors. Trust that is earned.
KNRC News Time is 106. Time to go to Darren Copeland now in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report brought to you by the Air National Guard. Westbound I-70 at Peoria have a car, or actually it's an oversized vehicle, an oversized semi, broke its axle, so it's on the shoulder, but it's kind of peeking out of traffic. Watch for minor delays through there. It's going to be there for a while, so just watch for that as they try and get that fixed and up and out of the way. High winds along the foothills on Highway 93 between Boulder and Golden, so watch for that, especially if you're driving a high-profile vehicle. Everything else, though, getting along nicely. Money for college plus job skills from a part-time job. You bet. Fuel your future in the Air National Guard. Call 800-TO-GO-ANG. That's 800-TO-GO-ANG. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with a KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. Some scattered snow showers in the mountains and blustery winds across the plains, but the winds will be decreasing tonight. A warmer day today with a high of 43, but clouding up with a low tonight of 24. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, a high near 50, and then a little more sunshine and 51 for the high on Thursday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly sunny, 42 degrees. KNRC News Time is 107. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 135 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
107, 7 minutes after 1 o'clock. Welcome to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I'm delighted to be back from Italy. I had a great time. If you're just tuning in, I have a lot of people to thank. I want to thank Tom Reed, T.R. Reed from the Washington Post for filling in. I also want to thank Jerome Davis, and I want to thank Judy Schwartz and Evelinda Ehrman for filling in the Style Twins. Everybody did. I'm told everybody did a fabulous job, so thanks to all of you. I had a wonderful time, and I was regaling you with these boring things like, look at my snapshots. But there are a lot of good observations to be made and a lot of politics that's happening now. But before we get much farther, I also want to thank one of our listeners, Preston, who he's just incredible. He has taken his responsibilities as a citizen seriously. He writes a lot of letters to the editors and various magazines, a lot of letters, and many of his letters are published. And he very frequently cites KNRC and me specifically, and the most recent example of this is in the January edition of The Sun, which is a very well-respected magazine. And I tried to get a copy. A friend in New York let me know that I was mentioned in the letters to the editor, and the Tattered Cover didn't have it yet, but the friend sent the copy, so maybe it's at the Tattered Cover now. I tried to get it before I left, but he says the following. He is writing his letter to the editor, and he references a previous article. And then he goes on to say that a growing number of progressives are calling into local and national programs to talk about the American empire, corporate crime, climate change, and other marginalized topics. The format demands concise statements and the patience to endure temperamental hosts. But it takes only a moment to interrupt reactionary thought patterns and to suggest alternative sources of information. There are even a handful of pioneering progressive hosts like Enid Goldstein on KNRCRadio.com and Tom Hartman at IEAmericaRadio.com, who love to hear from people who believe in the power of the word. So thank you very much, Preston. I really appreciate that. It's funny how people can be goodwill ambassadors, too, for the station when they like what they're hearing. And what we're trying to give you here at AM 1150 KNRC is honest talk radio, real talk radio, not the homogenized, consolidated, stale stuff that everybody's drinking from the same old trough of vat of stultified ideas. We have wonderful guests on, a whole array of people who make opinion, people whose opinions ought to be listened to. Some you may disagree with, some you may agree with, but I always try to bring you what I think of as top-of-the-line talk. And then we also have fun. We also, in addition to that, Barbara Walters, Bubba Wawa, she's leaving 2020. She's 73 years old. Well, maybe she might be a little older than 73. I don't know. Her face is a little bit younger than 73, but we're not going there. Anyway, she leaves 2020 in September, and some people are saying it's a loss for ABC News. She still will continue on with The View. Al Franken got into a dust-up. He body slammed a demonstrator to the ground after the man tried to shout down Governor Howard Dean. The tussle left Franken's trademark thick rim glasses broken, but he said he was not injured. He seemed to be in a state of shock and out of breath after the incident. He was helped back to his feet by several people who watched the tussle. Police arrived soon after. I got down low and took his legs out, said Franken afterwards. Franken said he's not backing Dean, but merely wanted to protect the right of people to speak freely. I would have done it if he were a Dean supporter at a Kerry rally. He said, I'm neutral in this race, but I'm for freedom of speech, which means people should be able to assemble and speak without being shouted down. I have to tell you, being in Italy, as the Iowa came down, I was amazed at the results. I could not believe that Kerry took it. I mean, I knew that Dean was slipping in the polls, but everybody said it was way too impossible to poll Iowa, the caucuses. But Kerry won by 38%. John Edwards, who's looking more and more cute and more credible, at 32%, and Howard Dean at 18%. Was Howard Dean the flash in the pan that got everybody so galvanized and so angry that they decided to take going after George W. Bush seriously, and then that has been his main role, and he will fade away? It's a little bit looking like that now, although it's probably still too early. But as you know, New Hampshire happens tonight, and right now it looks like as of, well, yesterday, and it changed from yesterday to today. So let me give you the numbers that I have right now on this tracking poll. Right now, Kerry is the projected, is ahead at 36%. Yesterday, he had 38%. So I don't know, you know, you've always got that plus or minus factor to deal with, but 38%, he was, the day before that, he was at 35%. So he's gone, in the last 5 or 6 days, Kerry has gone from 25 to 28 to 30 to 34 to 35, jumped to 38, now back down to 36. So that's been his trajectory. Next to him is Dean at 25%. So Dean is trailing by about 11%, and Dean's trajectory has been about a week ago, 32, 30, 25, 22, 23, 25, 25, holding at 25. Clark, a week ago, he's at 13 right now. A week ago, he was at 21. So Kerry a week ago was at 25, he's at 36. A week ago, Dean was at 32, he's at 25, he's going down. Kerry's going up. Clark, 21 a week ago, he's at 13 now. Lieberman, 7 a week ago, up to 10 now. Edwards, 7 a week ago, up to 10 now. Kucinich, 2 a week ago, down to 1. He was as high as 4 somewhere in there. Sharpton, a 1 a week ago, still a 1. So that's what it looks like. It looks like Kerry will take it. Is Kerry the guy? I don't care as long as he can beat Bush. That's all I care about. And I've been hearing reports that the Bush people are most concerned about John Edwards. But I don't know why. I don't know whether to take that seriously or if that's just blowing smoke, if that's really a smokescreen. Be careful with your computer. There's this horrible virus. We are feeling the effects of it here at the station. So an email worm that looks like a normal error message but actually contains a malicious program has snarled computers around the world today. One in every 12 messages contain the worm called MyDoom or NOVARG period. Security experts described it as the largest virus-like outbreak in months. It began spreading rapidly yesterday during business hours in the U.S. By comparison, many previous outbreaks had started during Asian business hours, allowing antivirus vendors to develop defenses by the time these viruses got to the U.S. and U.S. companies opened up shop. But this one started in the U.S., so there wasn't time to get the defenses together in the same way. Whenever a virus begins to start in the States, it usually becomes much bigger, said one researcher. Some corporate networks were clogged with infected traffic within hours of the worm's appearance, and operators of many systems voluntarily shut down their email systems. So be very careful here in your emails. As I said, we are experiencing right here some of the effects of it. CBS, they're not going to let Charlie Fisher's anti-Bush ad, the MoveOn.org ad, run for the Super Bowl. They are going to take beer advertising. They're going to take some of these other crummy advertising, but they're not going to let this wonderful commercial that Charlie Fisher, Denver native, put together for MoveOn.org, and that's the commercial that won their contest. It's called Bush in 30 Seconds. 303-382-1150. Is Dean going to be a flash in the pan? Kay, calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. This is Kay, yes. And it's so strange you mentioned about the sun, because this, I just got back from California. My sister lives out there, and she always gives me a subscription to the sun. And I hadn't yet read the January issue, but I was telling her about you, saying, this is finally what we need in in radio. And so I get back and I'm reading, and here you are mentioned. So I emailed her to say, check out that letter, and congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, it's from Preston, one of our regular callers.
Is that right?
Yeah, he wrote a letter to the editor. Anybody can write a letter to the editor. His tend to get published with a certain amount of frequency, and he's very kind to mention me and the radio station. So,
yeah.
Preston, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Well, and I had just mentioned it out there. That's what was odd. And I'm happy that you're back. I missed you. And I also long ago wanted to call when you were talking about the gay marriage thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had just, again, been out to California to be a celebrant of gay friends of mine who have been married 50, not married, they've been together 55 years.
Oh,
now,
my goodness.
I think they should set the standard for our straight marriages.
You mean the ones that dissolve in 20 minutes?
Yes.
Or if the gifts aren't just right at the reception?
Yes.
I see. Well, there's a thought. Thank you, Kay. I appreciate your kind words.
Well, thank you, Enid. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye. 303-382-1150. Roger sends me this email. CBS has decided that they will run ads from the following groups. Remember now, they're not going to run the MoveOn.org ad, the one that Charlie Fisher from Denver won with his Bush in 30 Seconds, where child labor, child's play was the name of his ad. CBS will be running ads for the following: beer companies, tobacco companies, and the Bush White House. But they are refusing to run the ad from MoveOn.org. You want to comment about that? 303-382-1150. Having just come off of some very long airplane flights, I was very interested to see that the Rocky today is reporting that airlines are going to be giving the U.S. all passenger data starting, I believe, in the fall. The government is ordering airlines to provide background information on passengers for a new security system that aims to keep dangerous people off planes. Asa Hutchinson says, who is the Homeland Security Undersecretary, he says that he wants to begin testing the system this spring. It could be fully operational by summer. All right, so spring, not fall. I had that wrong. Hutchinson said building the system is a Homeland Security Department priority. The information that is given by a passenger to the airlines is important for us to have in terms of name, address, date of birth, so we can properly assure the safety of a particular flight. Well, we had to fill out forms, which I've never had to fill out before, and believe me, European personnel are very... They think this is complete BS. You just drop it in a Department of Transportation, DOT box, that's right there as you're boarding the plane. But they want to know who to contact in the event of an emergency. They want your name. I think they want your address. I forgot now what they want. They want your date of birth And apparently they want all of this passenger data. Let me tell you something. Whatever they're going to ask for, if you're going to be a terrorist, you're going to figure yourself a way around that system. And everybody else is going to be massively inconvenienced, their privacy massively compromised. And it's funny, there are all these security checkpoints. You clear security when you get, let's say, from Venice, and then you go to Frankfurt, and then if you want to get on that plane to the U.S., you have to go through a whole other security checkpoint. And there, it's not a deal where you just go through, and if they set off the metal detectors there, they wand you. No, they wand everybody before they get on the plane. And you see a lot of Muslims running around in Venice. Remember, we're not so far from Hamburg, which is sort of the terrorist capital of the universe. And they're wearing their, you know, regular Muslim drag, may I say, and they're looking very stony, like they hate us all. I don't know, maybe I'm mistranslating the looks. But in any event, here are the airlines that are going to be ordered to give the U.S. all passenger data. So more and more and more we're being cracked down on. And all the real ways that they could be stemming terrorism, they're not beginning to do it. They don't want to, they're not inspecting what's coming into various ports. They're not beefing up the security for nuclear facilities and other facilities. None of that is happening. Instead, we're the ones paying the price for it. They're coming down harder with the Patriot Act and so on. Now, Dr. David Kaye's remarks that Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction before the war and that U.S. intelligence agencies missed the signs that would have told them as much. Anybody who's been following the story knew that that was the case. But coming from such a high-level person as David Kaye, I was delighted to hear that that had happened. I sort of was out of it. I never really read a newspaper while I was gone. But in coming back, I'm seeing the story. And I'm watching President Bush in an interview today. And he's saying, well, there was the gathering. In my mind, he's saying, he's spinning it beautifully. In my mind, and then there was gathering evidence. But in previous stories, what we know is that the data, the intelligence data, was highly politicized. It was cherry-picked to make the administration's case. They knew also that there were no weapons of mass destruction. They were aware of it, but they had to make the case. They had to sell it to the American public. And maybe that woman in Italy was right. We're too naive, we're too young, we're too dumb. Nobody is outraged. Nobody cares. Nobody cares enough to get out from behind the remote, get off the couch, and start screaming about it and say, wait a minute, we were really lied to. People are dying for all these false reasons to sell us this war. Why didn't you tell us that it was to reshape the region, that we wanted to get that? Oh, and by the way, why didn't Bush the first take out Saddam Hussein? Do you know the answer to that question? In an interview with Bill Clinton after he left the presidency, he says, a lot of people have asked that question. He said, I happen to know the facts. And the facts were, according to Bill Clinton, that President Bush, the old man, Poppy, made a deal and with the Arab countries. And the deal was that they would not sign on to the Americans coming in unless Saddam Hussein were protected. So in order to get the support of the Arab nations in the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, we had to agree not to take out Saddam Hussein. So here we are, we're marching into Baghdad, and we stop short of taking out Saddam Hussein. And that is the story, according to Bill Clinton. 303-382-1150. Will Howard Dean do it? Can he do it? Is he a flash in the pan, somebody who galvanizes the anger against Bush, shows that it's possible to mount an effective campaign against Bush? Will it be Kerry? Can Kerry take Bush if Kerry winds up being the candidate? Does it matter who wins the New Hampshire primary? There's still a lot of time between now and the election. You can win the Iowa caucus. You can win the New Hampshire primary. Maybe you're going to get more money as a result of it. But does that mean you're going to win the election? Is there a correlation? 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
AM 1150, KNRC.
Yeah.
Belcaro Paint and Decorating hopes you'll forgive us for bragging a little. We've won an award. And because the environment is really important to us, we're pretty proud of it. Belcaro, a Benjamin Moore dealer, was recently named a recipient of the Environmental Achievement Award by the state of Colorado. What's our achievement? It's the Wet Paint Color Swatch Program, which Belcaro pioneered nationally. As you know, choosing the right paint color is usually by trial and error. In the past, consumers had to buy an entire quart to get a sample. Wrong colors often get tossed out and eventually make their way into the environment. but Belcaro offers 1.5 ounce paint swatches, enough to cover 4 square feet, and more than enough to make the right decision. They're inexpensive and come in more than 6,000 colors, including our entire Benjamin Moore line. Wet paint color swatches. Good for you, good for the environment. From Belcaro Paint and Decorating, a Benjamin Moore quality paint dealer. 5475 Leechdale Drive, just one block west of Holly. Online at belcaro.com.
Hi, this is Doug Kelly. Joining me now is Brenda at Golden Triangle Wines and Spirits. Brenda, I thought this time we would play a little food and wine association.
Okay, Doug, I'm game.
All right, I'll give you the food. You tell me the great wine to go with it, okay? How about duck breast?
Let's do a Spanish pirato. How about ambrugues?
Sounds good. How about sea scallops wrapped in bacon?
Crisp Pinot Grigio, nice and crisp and refreshing.
Bratwurst.
Bratwurst? Well, that's not a wine. Oh, you got to do beer with bratwurst. How about Utenos, Lithuanian beer, or... better yet, flag porter. Yummy.
Lamb chops.
California Zinfandel. Dash California Zinfandel would be perfect with lamb chops.
Now, one everybody would want to know about, pizza.
Oh, lots of options for pizza. You could do a Primitivo. You could do a Sangiovese out of Tuscany, Italy.
I bet you've got one for sushi, too, don't you?
Champagne or sparkling wine. It's a great pair.
I knew you'd have the answer. Golden Triangle Wines and Spirits, located 12th and Broadway.
Golden Triangle Wine and Spirits, where variety, pricing, and convenience intersect at the corner of 12th and Broadway. Call 303-893-8437.
AM 1150 KNRC and the Denver Business Journal presents Insights, fascinating people making an impact on our world. Tune in to KNRC weekdays at 7:20 a.m. to hear interviews with leaders like Charles Schwab, Michael Dell of Dell Computers, Gloria Steinem, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. These extraordinary individuals will share what made the difference in their careers and help them to establish their roles as leaders. Insights is brought to you by EKS&H Accounting and Business Advisory Firm and First National Bank of Colorado.
Hi, I'm Doug Kelly. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
125 on the lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. You know, since I was in Italy for a week in Venice, I didn't hear Dean and his scream that everybody was referring to, and I just heard it in the control room because we have it on tape. And why is everybody dissing Howard Dean? Why is he such a punching bag? To me, it just sounds like one of those victory things. All right, we lost in Iowa. We're going to take Michigan. We're going to take New York. We're going to take blah, blah, blah. He's just reinvigorating the troops. What is the big deal? Why is he so ridiculed and reviled? Why is he such a punching bag? And is he going nowhere? Was his job here simply to galvanize the electorate, to get him off their behind, to say, look, we can take Bush, and let's, you know, galvanize the anger? Was he a lightning rod for it? Also a way to tap an untapped constituency via the internet. Does he have a chance here? I don't care. I just want Bush out. Whoever can do it. Susan in Allen's Park. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, Enid. Welcome back home.
Thank you very much, Susan.
Just wanted to make a comment about the difference between Kerry and Dean and does it matter. I think everybody who's committed to getting Bush out of there is going to vote for whoever it is, you know, ABB and all that.
Right.
But in the last week since Iowa and Dean came in that third, I've watched the speeches that everybody's been giving. But as a Dean supporter, I've been closely watching Dean, and I'm even more impressed with him now than I was in the beginning.
Why is everybody, you know, Sean running the board, keeping us on the air, Joe Anderson, my producer, said, you got to hear this. So I'm in there, and I'm listening to the Dean, what they're calling kind of a primal scream, but it's everybody who runs a campaign. You lose in Iowa, you want to reinvigorate the troops, so you're doing that. Why is it such a big deal? Why has he come in? Apparently, he's been an object of criticism and ridicule all week long because of it.
Oh, they just have hammered him. Meet the Press and Tim Russert. And,
oh, please. Tim Russert asked George W. Bush all these softball, stupid questions.
And
gave him a free pass in every single way. And the minute they can put it to Dean, he is so threatening to them that they're always happy to put it to him.
They smashed him. And Chris Matthews' show, they spent the entire show on Sunday just bashing him completely. And it's throwing a lot of doubts into people's minds. But the things I've seen that Kerry has done over the whole year that I've been watching these guys that I'm concerned now, is he makes sure that his voting record looks good. He doesn't inconvenience himself in any way that way. And then he's He might not have PAC money, but he's got lobbyists coming in and out of his door, including
He's got a rich wife. He's rich. He's going to get money. Money he will have. I don't know if he can connect with the electorate. Edwards, I saw him in an interview on Bill Maher's show last night. Here I am, mostly incoherent from such a long and jet lagged, and here he is on Maher's show, and I'm not sure I heard him ever do as well as he did on Bill Maher's show.
He's really refined well in the last week, but I've watched this whole week. He says exactly the same thing every time. What I liked about the speeches I saw Dean give this week is he absolutely responds to the crowd. He listens to what people say, and he makes the effort to specifically answer their questions. He goes out of his way.
What he's able to do is he connects. Nobody was able to do that better than Bill Clinton. Nobody was more gifted in retail politics than Bill Clinton. Kerry, I could go for Kerry. I like Dean. I want to see somebody who can really go up against Bush. But remember, John Kerry voted for this bogus war in Iraq. Nobody had the balls to say, wait a minute, none of this makes any sense. And I'm going to tell you something. It wasn't simply a matter of, okay, we're in the clutches of post 9/11 fear.
No.
If you were, I could see through it. And
sure.
I'm not sitting in the halls of power where those people have far more information at their fingertips and a lot more classified information than I do.
The strength, more than anything else, of Dean is his concept of foreign policy. It's related to our oil consumption. It's related to renewable energy. It's related to security. He wraps it all up together. It's a web of things that makes total sense to me. But
why is he getting it? Why is his gaining cult-like status on the web, apparently. It's been dubbed, I have a scream speech delivered on Martin Luther King holiday.
He's totally threatening to them because he says what he means. He tells the truth.
And they want to undermine him.
He's beholden to the media.
You know, want to know something? He's not beholden to the lobbies either, and everybody wants to undermine him because they don't have him in their back pocket. Susan, I thank you for the call. That, I have a feeling that's part of it. He is a loose cannon, so they're, in that sense, that they can't, he's not bought and paid for like a lot of other guys. In today's New York Times, Vice President, here. The headline of this editorial, Mr. Cheney, meet Mr. K. Vice President Dick Cheney continues to insist that Iraq has been trying to make weapons of mass destruction, apparently oblivious to the findings of the administration's own chief weapons inspector, that Iraq had only rudimentary capabilities and unrealized intentions. The vice president's myopia suggests a breathtaking unwillingness to accept a reality that conflicts with the administration's preconceived notions. This kind of rigid thinking helped propel us into an invasion without broad international support. And if Mr. Cheney is as influential as many say, could propel us into further misadventures down the road. I'm looking at some old magazines that I didn't have time to get to because I don't have any time here. And I'm reading them on the plane. And here's Condoleezza Rice. Here's Donald Rumsfeld saying the evidence is bulletproof that there's a relationship between Al-Qaeda and Iraq, which there was not of any substance at all. That it's bulletproof that they have weapons of mass destruction and they were lying and they were knowingly lying. Both of them knew. That was not the case. 303-382-1150. 303-382-1150. And here, it looks like the CIA missed the disarray in the Iraqi arms program. The New York Times is reporting that American intelligence agencies failed to detect that Iraq's unconventional weapons programs were in a state of disarray in recent years under the increasingly erratic leadership of Saddam Hussein. David Kaye, who led the government's efforts to find evidence of Iraq's illicit weapons programs until he resigned last Friday, said that the CIA and other intelligence agencies did not realize that Iraqi scientists had presented ambitious but fanciful weapons programs to Hussein and had then used the money for other purposes. So the CIA missed it. And again, not one person, George Tenet's head didn't roll, nobody's head rolled as a result of the most massive intelligence failure. And let me tell you that, you can blame our intelligence services for the lack of good intelligence information, number one. But number two, what is becoming increasingly clear is that the administration has leaned on the intelligence agencies, politicized the gathering of intelligence without proper analysis, cherry-picking that which they could use to sell us the war. Much of it was completely bogus stuff. 303-382-1150. It's not just the intelligence services which will take the hit for this. It is also the administration politicizing the intelligence. Rick, calling from Loveland. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Good afternoon. I'm just looking for a decent third party. I cannot bring myself to vote for the Democrats.
You might as well flush your vote down the toilet, Rick, because you're going to give it to the Republicans if you're going to give it to a third party. Forget it.
Well, I see myself flushing my vote down the toilet, voting for... I see we're voting basically the same side of a coin. Bush is acting, spending us into oblivion. I am socially more along the lines of the Democratic Party, but fiscally I'm not. And if we could get a third party...
Fiscally you're not. Fiscally they're much more responsible. What part of that surplus did you not like in the last administration?
I'm not really fond of a lot of the programs.
What kind of programs specifically? Specifically, which programs?
Well, actually, pretty much everything that that Bush has voted for would generally be a Democratic platform.
What, the most massive deficits in the history? Tax cuts for the richest Americans? Have you seen any evidence in your paycheck of a tax cut? I have not really seen anything that I can identify as a tax cut in my paycheck.
Well, that's what I mean, that I see them as two sides, both on the same side.
Rick, I'm going to tell you, if you vote for a third party, you might as well be voting for George W. Bush. 303-382-1150. Who saw the State of the Union address? I did not because I was in Europe, but I'm hearing that it was propelled by a lot of testosterone. We were in the testosterone zone, and he was real macho, George W. Dickey Bush. Really, really macho. Stand-up macho. I would like a synopsis from somebody or your take on it. Gary, Colorado Springs. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hey there.
Hi, Gary. Hi, welcome.
This stuff that you've been saying about the administration officials saying that the CIA didn't provide them good information is a pretty bold ruse on their part after the way they milked and browbeat and frisked the CIA in order to get...
There you go. Although I'm not saying that the administration is saying it.
David Kaye said that.
Yes, David Kaye said it, but not exactly the administration. He has resigned.
George Jr. came out with a statement that he supported the CIA and he had faith in their ability to come up with accurate information.
Oh, sure. Like where's his...
And then jumped off of that with his lies.
Well, exactly. And also his father, remember, don't ever forget that his father was the head of the CIA.
Then if he had so much faith in them, why did he take what they gave him and then turned it around and went out and extracted other information and just flat out lied about it? Why didn't he take their word and honor what they said and realize there were no weapons there?
Because everything that man says, remember they were going to restore honor and dignity, everything that George W. Bush says, most of it is a lie. He says it cherubically, you know, he says it with a lot of amiability. He postures as Mr. Macho Man, even though he's weak and petulant and querulous, incurious, and not really up to speed on a lot of things, bad-tempered and short-tempered, and was an alcoholic until he was about 40 years old, so a junkie in a certain way. And people are not calling him on the lies.
In talking on this issue, I think it's real important to make it clear that the CIA did not provide false information. They provided accurate information. The administration chose to tell lies that didn't relate to what
But they look said. At Tenet. Tenet never resigned over anything. He was being asked to stuff it, essentially, mm-hmm. to not support his own people. He didn't
right.
stand up. He was interested in keeping his own job. Mm-hmm. And so he's had to talk out of both sides of his face at the same time.
Right.
And somebody's head should have rolled after 9/11. Nobody's did.
Bush's head should have rolled. Nobody below him. But there's a lot.
Well, we can fire him in the next election if we get fired up. Maybe we can fire him. That would be my RX here, Gary.
Don't let him blame this alleged information failure on the CIA.
Well, I'll tell you what. A lot of retired CIA are furious, and so I hope they can use their intelligence capabilities here to undermine the liar in chief in the White House.
With respect to the CBS refusal to run the MoveOn.org.
No, they're busy with beer commercials and so on.
Yeah,
they don't have room.
Would it be possible? Is there an 800 number that you could call CBS and complain?
You
at?
Email them. Email Les Moonves. Moonves is going out with Julie Chen from the morning show, I guess. Email him. He's the head of CBS. You let him know how you feel about it. Tell him that you want MoveOn.org. I mean, look how he got a couple of emails on the Reagan miniseries because conservatives organized themselves, and he caved. So email him and let him know that you want MoveOn.org commercial to run in the Super Bowl and see what happens. It's CBS.com, I would think. Google it. Google it, Carrie. And I thank you for the call. I'm not the yellow pages here, guys and gals. Try and Google it on your own. Google.com, 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live right here on AM 1150 KNRC. 1:38, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 45 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by HP Business Printers. A tragic rollover accident on I-76 west of Fort Morgan this morning claimed the lives of three adults and a child. The Colorado State Patrol says 11 people were in the vehicle, which was designed for five. The seven people who survived this morning's crash have been hospitalized. The Colorado Department of Labor and Employment says that labor market conditions in the state remained relatively level in December. The seasonally adjusted unemployment rate inched up 0.2% to 5.8%. A bill that would have allowed gays and lesbians to be legal parents to the children of their partners never made it out of a legislative committee yesterday. The bill would have let homosexual couples adopt children as a couple, but now only one of the pair can be the legal guardian of an adopted child. In sports, the Colorado Avalanche returned to the Pepsi Center tonight to host the Edmonton Oilers. The Avs wrapped up their four-game road trip Saturday in Pittsburgh, where they beat the Penguins. Buy an affordable HP Color LaserJet 1500L now and get your business to experience the benefits of printing in HP Color. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 1:40.
PlayingPolitics2004.com is picking up evidence of intelligent life in the far center. These sounds, audible only to people who are reasonable and humorous about political debate, take several months to reach the unconditioned ear of demagogues on the far left and far right. But it's happening. The radical left and right are listening, but they are not amused. Unlike the Today Show, PlayingPolitics2004.com is separating the politicians from their real agendas by more than a floral arrangement. Do you want a humorous look at where Dean's really coming from? Rumsfeld's battlefield strategy, or Hillary's plans for you? What does Pat Robertson stand for and the ACLU kneel to? Or is it the other way around? These decks will tell you. Playing Politics 2004 card decks can be purchased at select Borders bookstores or at www.playingpolitics2004.com. We're doing business the old-fashioned way, legally.
KNRC News Time is 1:41. Time to check the roads with Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report brought to you by Money Mailer, and we got a couple accidents. Colorado and Evan had an accident and then another one in the backup, so watch for that. That's going to take a while to get out of the way. Also had another accident coming in at 17th and California. Larimer and Spear had a bit of a bang-up as well. One more for you, 8th and Broadway. Look for Money Mailer's jumbo red, white, and blue envelope arriving this week in your mailbox. Money Mailer's packed with coupons and money-saving offers from businesses in your neighborhood. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC Traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. We have been enjoying a warmer day today, but with 20 to 40 mile an hour wind gusts near the foothills, that'll be the trend as we head on in through tonight, and then those winds will be calming down. We should top out around 43 for the high today. It'll cloud up tonight with a low of 24, mostly cloudy tomorrow, but near 50, and with a little more sunshine in the mix of things on Thursday, a high of 51. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Under mostly sunny skies, it's 45 degrees. KNRC News Time is 1:42. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Wow, I can't believe it. 50 years. Hi, this is Keith Lair with my sister Linda asking you to come see Lair Fireplace and Patio for all your fireplace needs and help us celebrate our 50th year in business.
Lair's is truly a family business. With our brother Ken at our Arvada store at 81st and Sheridan, I'm at our Littleton store on South Broadway, just north of Arapahoe Road, and Keith is at our original store in Denver at Holly and Evans.
When our father, Joe Lair, started in 1954, he had a very simple philosophy. Sell quality products products and treat your customers fairly. You know what? It's worked for 50 years.
That's why we carry quality fireplaces and inserts from Napoleon.
If you're building, remodeling, or converting an existing fireplace to gas, check out the superior construction and efficiency of Napoleon.
You know, the fireplace is the focal point of most rooms, so do it right. Don't skimp. Our expert installers can give you a free estimate right in your home.
That's Lair Fireplace and Patio, Denver's most trusted fireplace specialist for 50 years.
KNRC Market Watch.
Markets continue to sag inside the final hour of Wall Street trading. Dow Industrials now down 66 points. NASDAQ is losing 30. The S&P 500 index now down 9 points. Markets pulling back from some of the new highs we set yesterday, though. Bernadette Murphy, chief market analyst at Kimmelman and Baird, says this is nothing.
I would probably feel better if we had more of a pullback. I think that it would give the markets and investors a buying opportunity, shall we say.
Murphy notes we have not had a 5% pullback since this rally began. Federal government sending workers home early as an ice storm threatens the afternoon commute in Washington, but Alan Greenspan will have to bear through the weather. As so-called essential employees, Federal Reserve policymakers are required to stay in Washington and hold their scheduled two-day meeting, which got underway about an hour ago. For what it's worth, our survey of economists calls for no change in interest rates. I'm Joe Matthew from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
144 on the Lucky Tuesday, back from Italy, back from Venice edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. In the next hour, we're going to be joined by Stephen J. Cannell. He's got a brand new book called Vertical Coffin. He's going to be at Tatter Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. He's had many hit TV series, and now he's writing hit books as well, and I think there are things in movie production and so on. We're talking about politics. Why did Dean peak? Does he have a future? Was his role merely to galvanize people and get them angry, to be a lightning rod for the Democratic anger against Bush? His scream is gaining cult-like status on the web. They're calling it the I Have a Scream speech. But to me, it's the usual political stuff. I don't know why he becomes the punching bag. Is it that Howard Dean becomes a punching bag because he's not in anybody's back pocket? He's willing to tell the truth. He's out there. And now, undergoing criticism, and then it makes the faint-hearted among us say, oh, well, he's not presidential. No, 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 no. You know what? I think he's got more courage than any president that we've got occupying the White House right now. Bush is getting very interesting in how he's defending himself against the allegations from David Kay, no weapons of mass destruction. Well, in my mind, he said, you know, it was the gathering storm and ba-da, ba-da, ba-da. He said he vigorously defended his decision to go to war against Iraq, despite Chief Weapons Inspector David Kay's conclusion that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction as the U.S. has believed. Bush said he had great confidence in the intelligence community, so much confidence that they have been in there politicizing, cherry-picking, and telling the intelligence community what they will and will not use. There's no doubt in my mind, said Bush, that Saddam Hussein was a gathering threat to America and others. That's what we know. We know he was a dangerous man in a dangerous part of the world, he said. See, now this isn't, it's bulletproof that we have weapons of mass destruction. This is not that statement. There is no doubt in my mind that the world is a better place without Saddam Hussein, Bush said Tuesday. America's more secure. America, in fact, is less secure. The world is safer and the people of Iraq are free. The people of Iraq have no electricity, very intermittent electricity. They're in terrible shape. They're not free, and it's going to cost us a fortune. Would you have voted for this if you knew going in? And what about Howard Dean? Does he have a future? John Kerry, looking like, if you're looking at the tracking polls, he's way ahead of John Dean, or of Howard Dean in terms of the New Hampshire primary. What do you think is going to happen? Is Kerry going to be the guy? Is he electable? 303-382-1150. Brian, calling from Loveland. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Yeah, hi, Nina.
Hi. Brian, I'm going to spell my name for you. It's Enid, E-N-I-D.
Oh, Tina.
No, Brian, it's Enid, E-N-I-D.
Oh.
Got that?
Okay.
You think you can say it?
Ena?
No. E-N-I-D. Enid.
Yeah, Ena.
No.
Enta, or... I can't even say it.
No, you can't. So if you can't say it, you're not smart enough to be on this show. 303-382-1150, 303. I'm sure he wasn't a serious caller. What the New Hampshire voters want is someone to beat Bush. No matter who they want to win their presidential nomination, Democrats in the state of New Hampshire give the same reason for their choice. And one of the pollsters said they have never seen anybody, no group greater, no group more ferocious in wanting to, in other words, there's a kind of a level of ferocity here in wanting to get Bush out of office that has rarely been seen. 303-382-1150. Tom, on a cell. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Just a couple of quick comments, Enid.
Yeah.
First, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
I'm glad you had a lovely trip.
I did.
As far as the Bush administration goes, I firmly believe that they're going to implode over trying to keep their lives straight. There's a lot of time between now and the election.
I hope you're right about that. I really, really hope. And coming back from Europe, before I went, I just saw him. You know, this is all intuitive. What do I know? I can't. I'm looking at the same tea leaves. And by the way, look how wrong all the pundits were, as a matter of fact. And when I was on Fox News before I left, even the host, John Kasich, former congressman, they wanted to know what I thought about who was going to win the Iowa caucus. Well, how do I know? The polls were unreliable, but it looked to me like Dean was slipping. I said, it looks like Dean is slipping, and Kasich thought that that Dean would win. Well, he was wrong. Most of the pundits have been wrong so far in their assessments. So, and coming back from Europe, I felt like Bush had more support. Now, maybe it's just me. I'm feeling different. Maybe I'm just jet-lagged. But it feels like there's beginning to be the beginnings of some real erosion for Bush.
I totally agree with you. And I was a Dean supporter. Because he had the guts to vote against the war.
Well, he didn't vote against it. He was against it. He wasn't a senator, though.
Well, yes, I'm sorry. To speak out against the war. But I do believe that we need somebody like Kerry that's not so easy to pick on by the right-wingers, you know? I mean, it's hard to...
You're never going to... Those are people who live on a diet of red meat. They're always going to find something. They're going to take a pimple and they're going to turn it into Mount Everest every single time.
Very well put. But Kerry does have the distinction of being a decorated war hero, really. And
You solve that by putting Wesley Clark on the ticket as a vice president. I don't see that Wesley Clark has got the mojo to get going here.
He's not much of a Democrat, to tell you the truth. I really don't trust him. I'm sorry, but I don't trust him. And as far as the CBS goes, I beg of people just to email them inform them, as I did, that I will boycott all the products that are advertised.
If you threaten to boycott their advertisers, boy, they do pick up and take notice. They sit up and...
The airways do belong to the people, after all.
Well, there's a novel idea.
I wish people would, as you well know, I wish people would keep that in mind.
Thank you, Tom.
My pleasure.
I appreciate your comments. Thanks so much. 303-321-1150. Pete, calling from Aurora. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Yo, that was mad rude. I just heard the last guest, and just because he couldn't say your name, his opinion wasn't important?
Darling, if he can't say the name, he's not smart enough to be on the show.
You went to Fox, and you come back, and now you got your head stuck up your ass? What's that about?
There we go. Okay, thanks for that. 303-382-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
From baby steps to giant strides, we'll keep you informed every step of the way. AM 1150 KNRC. The KNRC Community Commitment.
Black Tie Colorado is teaming up with local nonprofits to promote the needs of our local charities. Their website, www.blacktie-colorado.com, lists organizations looking for donations for specific items. $50 relocates one prairie dog for Prairie Dog Action, and $25 buys one toner cartridge for Girls Incorporated of Metro Denver. Support local charities and donate by going to www.blacktie-colorado.com and click on Make the Difference.
This is a test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test. This is a coordinated test of the emergency alert system by broadcast stations and cable systems in your area. If this had been an actual emergency, an official message would have followed the alert tone. This concludes this test of the emergency alert system.
James Hardy Siding provides homeowners the beauty of wood without the usual maintenance. Visit them on the web at jameshardy.com to learn more. That's JAMESHARDIE.com.
Some people prefer the right wing. Others prefer the left wing. Hear both sides talk on AM 1150 KNRC. Our diverse lineup of talk show hosts features more viewpoints and perspectives than any other Denver talk station. Join Greg Dobbs from 6 to 10 a.m. Bill O'Reilly from 10 till noon. Enid Goldstein from noon to 3. Doug Kellett from 3 to 6. Dominic and Bill from 6 to 9 p.m. Lionel from 9 to midnight, followed by Alan Combs. Get your side, get their side. Hear both sides talk. AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Dominic Barasha.
And I'm Bill Thorpe.
Join us weeknights from 6 to 9 here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Now back to Enid Goldstein.
153, the Lucky Tuesday, back from Italy edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And that other caller knows my name. He's just he was just trying to be... I don't know what he was trying to be, if anything, but if you can't, it's pretty rude. Not if you can't say the name of the host, and you're just being manipulative. We don't have time for it. You're not dumb. You're not smart enough to be on the Enid show. That's it. Poles are protesting U.S. visa rules. We can't go there from. It's tragic, and Poles are really offended by this because they provided a presence in Iraq, a military presence in Iraq, but Poles are very bent out of shape because here they are supporting Iraq, supporting us in Iraq with troops. And you don't know whether you, if you're applying for a visa in this country, you're going to get it. You're going to have to pay $100. And if you don't get the visa, you don't get your $100 back. And then also Poles have to undergo the indignity of being fingerprinted on arrival in the U.S. Why do Poles need visas at all when they're about to join the European Union? And I don't think European Union members need visas. So they are very upset about it. And their head honcho is here in Washington meeting with President Bush on the subject. 303-381-1150, Martha Stewart trial underway. Working women dominate the jury in the Martha Stewart trial. Some of them work in the financial services industry, but I don't know, they've got about they've got a number of working women on the trial, so I guess her defense attorneys think that that will work on her behalf. No doubt about it, says the headline of this story, doors open if you're Neil Bush. And if you're Neil Bush, the door is open, and guess what's there? Asian prostitutes who just are there to have sex with you, you haven't contracted for them. So you know what that sounds like? What it sounds like is these prostitutes were arranged by people who wanted to do Neil Bush favors. 303-382-1150. Let CBS know how you feel about their decision not to air the MoveOn.org winner of the Bush in 30 Seconds contest. Why didn't you let them know? Conservatives organize themselves into calling trees, and boy, that's it. They get a number of calls, and they get a number of emails, and they're right there changing their mind. I think people ought to let CBS know. Let them know how you will treat their advertisers. And when they hear that you're going to boycott the advertisers, they really do sit up and pay attention. Rush Limbaugh, Mr. OxyContin, while I was gone, I can't believe this, prosecutors rejected a deal Rush Limbaugh's attorney suggested they would have that would have seen Rush enter a drug intervention program, which didn't he just enter one, rather than face charges for illegally obtaining prescription painkillers. In other words, illegally going doctor shopping. So he was ready to do a plea bargain. Oh, my goodness. Jim, calling from Denver. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Enid.
Jim.
This is Jim.
Yes, I know.
I'd like to refer you to an article in Mother Jones Magazine.
Okay.
The Lie Factory.
Okay. I've got the Mother Jones. I haven't had time to look at it.
You've got that article?
Yes, I do.
It's really good.
Okay.
It's a special report on the secret Pentagon unit of neoconservative hawks who cherry-picked the Bush administration's case for invading Iraq.
Okay, who's the writer?
Robert Dreyfus and Jason Vest.
Okay, we'll go after him, Jim. Thanks.
Take a look.
Thanks very much for that.
Thanks.
All right, 303-382-1150. Don, calling from Littleton. Hi, you're live with Enid.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And I don't think Howard Dean is electable.
Why?
Because he projects that he's mean-spirited. And I think that Iowa and New Hampshire is going to prove that he just isn't electable. That's all there is to it.
What when I you mean, say mean-spirited, are you confusing that with anger?
Yeah.
Well, mean-spirited is not the same as being angry. They're different.
Well, I mean, he's projecting that he is mean-spirited.
No, you're interpreting mean-spiritedness. I actually see a generosity, and I'm seeing a lot of courage, and I'm seeing the anger. I see that. I'm not calling that mean-spirited, but you are.
Yeah, but do you really think that Howard Dean is electable? Could he beat Bush?
Well, we'll see. I don't know. Apparently, he's certainly the media's biggest punching boy right now, and nobody has gotten the scrutiny that he has, and Dickie Bush has certainly gotten a free pass all the way through here.
Well, yeah, I agree to that, but the Democrats are getting a lot of airtime everywhere. And but
they're not getting the free pass.
Dean was the better candidate, actually. Dean is a very frugal person.
Yes.
He probably could have balanced the budget. He probably could eventually bring us a health care plan, because that's what he did in Vermont.
Yes.
But his campaign was conducted in such a way that he has shot himself in the foot. He's never, ever going to get back into this thing. It's going to be Kerry and probably Edwards. Another thing that hurts Dean is that Dean wants to revoke all the tax cuts. Kerry and Edwards only want to set back the tax cuts for the very rich, leave them for the middle class. And that's going to work.
Well, you might be right. I mean, we'll see what happens, Don. It may be that Dean won't be able to recover from this. We'll see as we go along, but I do thank you. You had some excellent points to make. I hope you'll call us again. 303-32-1150. I'm Enid Goldstein. You are listening to the Lucky Tuesday Welcome Home from Italy edition of Enid Live. Yours until 3 o'clock in the next hour. We're going to be joined by Stephen J. Cannell live in studio. His new book, Vertical Coffin. He'll be at Tatter Cover tonight, Cherry Creek, 7:30. You can meet him if you've been a fan of his TV shows. Now you can be a fan of his books. I'm Enid Goldstein, and you're listening to AM 1150.
Both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Enid Goldstein continues straight ahead. It's 2 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 45 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Hotwire.com. Four people, three adults and a child, were killed this morning in a rollover accident on I-76 west of Fort Morgan. Colorado State Patrol Master Trooper Ron Watkins describes this morning's crash.
A 1995 GMC Yukon traveling eastbound on I-76 lost control, drifted off to the left side, overcorrected, and ran off the right side of the roadway. The vehicle rolled approximately 2 3/4 times.
Watkins says there were 11 people in the vehicle, which is designed for only five. It's unknown if any of the occupants of the vehicle were wearing seatbelts. The seven surviving occupants of that crash were hospitalized. Labor market conditions in Colorado remained relatively level in December, according to the Colorado Department of Labor and Employment. The seasonally adjusted unemployment rate inched up 0.2% to 5.8% in December. Jeff Wells, executive director of the State Labor Department, said, quote, although hiring during the holiday season was flatter than usual, the unemployment rate is still hovering in the 5.4 to 5.9% range, as it has for more than a year. In December of 2002, the state unemployment rate was also 5.8%. Last month, seven of the 11 major industry sectors reported growth over the month, with four industry sectors declining. Leisure and hospitality posted the largest gain on the strength of ski resort operations. Lakewood police have arrested two suspects in connection with a homicide a week ago Saturday, and they're seeking a third suspect. The victim was 43-year-old Danny Monk. His body was found behind a business at 20th Avenue and Youngfield Street. Lakewood Police Department spokesman Steve Davis says the suspect still at large is 26-year-old Rodney Valenzuela. Davis is hoping members of the public will provide information that can lead to Valenzuela's arrest.
We would really like to hear from him, and we would really like to get Mr. Valenzuela off the streets. He is to be considered very dangerous, and no one should try to contact him without the assistance of law enforcement personnel.
Late last week, detectives arrested 48-year-old Donald James Drew and 38-year-old Robert Gene Valenzuela Jr., charging them with first-degree murder. An arrest for the younger Valenzuela has been issued. An arrest warrant has been issued for the younger Valenzuela, charging him with murder one as well. Talk show pioneer Jack Parr has died after a lengthy illness. Parr is widely known as the father of late-night television. He served as host of The Tonight Show from 1957 through 1960. 1962, before Johnny Carson took over that show. He was so popular with viewers that the show was renamed the Jack Parr Show after just 1 year of hosting. Celebrated for his unpredictable personality and witty banter, Parr is often credited with developing and refining the art of the late-night talk show. Parr was 85. New Hampshire residents are casting their ballots today in the nation's first primary election of the presidential race. Judy Ewell reports from Manchester, New Hampshire.
Voters in New Hampshire are going to the polls in steady numbers to choose their favorite in this presidential primary. Voter John Germanis won't say who won his support, but he will say who he voted against.
I'm afraid I would be considered anybody but Bush camp, but it still needs to be someone that's going to make decisions based upon positions that agree with my position, both socially and fiscally.
There is speculation that a record number of voters may cast ballots today. I'm Judy Ewell in Manchester.
It's another cold and blustery day for millions of Americans. Two strong storm systems continue to wreak havoc on states in the Midwest, the Mid-Atlantic, and in the Northeast. Flight delays and cancellations are common, as are other travel disruptions. Although no weapons of mass destruction have been uncovered in Iraq, President Bush is steadfast in his belief that the world is better off because of the war with Iraq. Speaking to reporters today, Bush said there's no doubt that former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein was a gathering threat to America and the world. An Arizona toddler is lucky to be alive, having survived on nothing but crackers for 5 days after a car crash that killed her mother. Their car hit a tree about 40 feet off the highway and 20 feet down an embankment, making it nearly impossible to see from the road. A passerby spotted the wrecked vehicle yesterday morning. Authorities found the little girl named Angel huddled with her mother's body. Just before the close of today's session, stocks continued lower. The Dow is down more than 78 points, the Nasdaq down about 36, the S&P 500 down almost 10. In sports, Colorado Avalanche back in town after a four-game road trip. Tonight, the Avs take on the Edmonton Oilers at the Pepsi Center. Paying full price for hotels? Well, here's your wake-up call. Log on to Hotwire.com and save up to 75% on hotels. Hotwire.com. Fly, sleep, drive, cheap. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:05.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman. We co-host Style Matters Live. It's the new year. How about a new you?
Aspen Grove, the fabulous open-air shopping center located at Santa Fe and Mineral in Littleton, is sponsoring the New Year, New You Makeover for one lucky man or woman or a couple. Winners will receive new hairstyles from Avalon Day Spa, makeup by the professionals at Origins, and a dinner for two on Valentine's Day for your reveal.
And that's not all. Each winner will receive a $1,000 shopping spree at Aspen Grove.
To enter, write 50 words or less on why you deserve this makeover. Include your photo. Drop this off at the Aspen Grove Management Office or the J. Crew Store.
Aspen Grove at Santa Fe and Mineral in Littleton is open Mondays through Saturdays 10 to 9 and Sundays 11 to 6. Call them at 303-794-0640. 303-794-0640. Experience shopping in a whole new light. Sunshine.
No purchase necessary. Employees and family members of KNRC and Aspen Grove Management are ineligible. Qualifiers will be chosen at random. Entries must be received by February 6th at the Aspen Grove Management Office or Aspen Grove J. Crew Store. For complete rules, stop at the Aspen Grove Management Office.
KNRC News Time is 2:06. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report brought to you by FedEx. On the freeways, looking pretty good. Westbound I-70 at Peoria have that particular stall with an oversized vehicle. Watch for that. We do have high wind warning, I should say, between Boulder and Golden, so watch for that. Colorado and Evans had a couple of accidents, as well as cleaning up an accident at Speer and Larimer. With Express Ground and Freight Services, FedEx offers delivery options for all your shipping needs. You can always rely on the ultimate and reliable shipping. Relax, it's FedEx. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. We have been enjoying a warmer day today, but with 20 to 40 mile an hour wind gusts near the foothills, that'll be the trend as we head on in through tonight, and then those winds will be calming down. We should top out around 43 for the high today. It'll cloud up tonight with a low of 24, mostly cloudy tomorrow, but near 50, and with a little more sunshine in the mix of things on Thursday, a high of 51. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
Under mostly sunny skies, it's 45 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:07. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
2:07, 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Lucky Tuesday. Welcome home from Venice edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and with me live in studio is one of our favorite guests, Stephen J. Cannell. He has a brand new book called Vertical Coffin, a Shane Scully novel. You can meet him tonight at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek at 7:30. Stephen, thank you so much for coming in today.
Great to be back.
I'm delighted. You look thinner, more gorgeous than ever, more accomplished than the last time we were here.
Oh,
be
so
my heart.
I'm so glad I closed my mouth and stopped eating all those. Well, I was never, you know, I never felt like I was overweight, you know, but, you know.
And you weren't overweight.
No, I never was. I mean, you know, I've never been over 208 pounds, you know, and I'm 6'2", so that's not huge, you know. But I'm now down to 190, so that's good.
It's funny, even 5 pounds. It's funny, 5 pounds can make a difference.
Yeah, well, this
too.
Is like 15.
15. Well, even more is better. Yeah. I want to hear about. I want to hear about Vertical Coffin.
Okay.
You wrote this book in 2 months.
Well, yeah, because I kind of took my eye off my publication date, and I got very involved in other things that I was doing. I had an acting job. I had a screenplay that I was writing, and one day I kind of got up and thought, you know, maybe I better take a look at the calendar and see when I got to get Vertical Coffin in. I'd sort of outlined it, but I hadn't written it. And I look at it and I'm like, oh my gosh, I've got to get this thing. I've got like 4 months to get it, to get my copy edited version off my desk. 5 months maybe. Which means that I have to get it finished in two, and then, and then I have to do a couple of rewrites, and then it's got to go to New York, and it's got to be, my editor has to take a swing at it, and then it has to come back, and then to do the rewrites, then I have to go to copy editing, and then I have to change, make all, you know, and I, all of a sudden I realized that I needed to, like, power this novel out, which is okay, because I find that when I'm writing fast, I'm writing better. My fastest screenplays are all the ones that I've won awards for, you know, where I've written I wrote a script once in 14 days, and I got the Writers Guild Award.
I want to talk to you about this, because this is amazing for many writers to hear this kind of velocity in terms of writing. Danielle Steele always had the reputation, and she lived in San Francisco, as did I. And I think it's sort of known in the publishing industry, but not known among her fans, that she writes her books in a couple of weeks. She stockpiles them. They carefully release them every 8 months or so to astronomical sales, and she's supposed to be a very quick study. Of course, the books read that way, but
yeah. Well, hopefully, mine
I hope
don't,
I don't sound too snobomatic on that.
No, I agree with you that they do, and mine. I mean, with me. I've always written better when I write fast. Now, I can't write a book in 2 weeks. I mean, I write about 10 pages a day.
Well, hers sound like they've been written in two weeks.
Yeah, and 10 pages a day is about what I normally, you know, write, even when I'm not under a lot of pressure. But sometimes what I'll do when I'll write 10 pages a day, but I'll take, like, maybe 2 or 3 or 4 weeks off. I'll write 150 pages and take 4 weeks off and do something else.
And you can pick it up again?
And I come back and I read it. And I read it like somebody else wrote it, because it's now like 10 or 15 days old or 2 weeks old or 3 weeks old. And I read it and I go, oh, my gosh, I overwrote this. It needs to be cut, tightened, brightened, whatever, you know. And so that's why you would normally write it. With this book, I didn't take any time off. And if you write 10 pages a day, you're going to write 500 pages in 50 days. You know, that's doable for me.
Where do you do the editing when you're doing 10 pages a day? And by the way, for people just tuning in, my guest, Stephen J. Cannell, his brand new book, Vertical Coffin. Stephen has an illustrious career, 40 television series. I didn't know it was 40, some of them. You know very well, The Rockford Files, Silk Stockings, The A-Team, 21 Jump Street, Hunter, Renegade, Wise Guy, The Commish, and your bestsellers include The Plan, Final Victim, Riding the Snake, The Devil's Workshop, King Khan, and on and on and on. You are a producer, you're a screenwriter, sometimes you're an actor, you're writing novels, and for a lot of your life you were dyslexic and, what, flunked 3 grades?
Yeah.
How do you manage to do all of this?
Well, you know, when you're doing what you love, it's pretty hard not to, you know, have a tremendous amount of energy for it. And I love what I'm doing. I mean, I would do it. I mean, money is not my goal, never was. I came from an upper middle class family. I could have inherited all my father's companies. I was a self-made millionaire, multimillionaire. You know, I was set up to go in there and take over 4 companies that he had built that were, you know, fairly well known in Los Angeles. And I chose to walk away and to become a writer instead. So it was never about money.
Did he live to see your success?
Oh, yeah. He was on the board of directors of my studio.
Oh, that's great.
When I created,
but I bet you he cautioned you against it when you walked away.
Absolutely did, and thought it wouldn't work. But when he saw my success come, and then when I formed the Cannell Studios in 81, And then we became the third largest studio in Hollywood for television. I had 2,000 employees. My dad never had that many people working for him, you know. So he came on my board, and he was like, he was just knocked out. And we were, then I was buying television stations and, you know, Canal Communications. We owned 5 TV stations all over the country and, you know, big ones. And, you know, and my dad was helping, you know, in the negotiation of the purchase of these television stations. And, you know, and it was just, I mean, he couldn't believe what was going on. And it was, for, neither could I. I mean, it was an amazing adventure.
When you're writing, Joe wants to know this question, my producer Joe Anderson. How do you go about researching books, scripts? How does that work for you? Because I see in the foreword here, you have a number of people that you're thanking.
Well, these are, you know, a lot of cops in this book. This book is about two SWAT teams that end up in a, in a, it looks like they're in a war with each other after hours. One is a federal SWAT team from alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, and the other one is a sheriff's SWAT team from the county sheriff's department, and for reasons that I will describe later, you know. But so I needed to know a lot about SWAT, and it was based on a real incident that took place in Los Angeles in 2001. I tried to go to the federal SWAT teams first, and they wouldn't talk to me because they are sort of the ones who are being sued by sheriffs and by a lot of civilians. And so I then went to sheriff's department, and they were very helpful. And there's a, you know, guy named Eric Pera, who's a lieutenant who runs the SWAT house there in L.A. in East L.A. for the sheriff's department. And you know, they showed me, you know, everything about the SWAT division and took me out on runs, and it was terrific. You know, I mean, you know, you can't buy that kind of realism for the book.
Did you have your plot in mind you sat down, or does it come to you in the writing? Do you know the end before you begin?
Absolutely. I on this book, I think I had a 50 or 60 page outline written before I ever started writing the novel. And that was not for my publisher to criticize and look at. I verbally pitched this to my publisher, keeping it sort of vague so that I don't want to, if you tell a publisher exactly what you're going to do, they start to criticize things that they don't really know how you're going to do it, and so they're asking you not to do things that when they actually read it, they wouldn't have a problem with. So what I learned to do, this was true of networks too, is just give them a very general pitch, but as far as I knew exactly what it is that I wanted to write, and had written a 50 or 60 page outline so that I knew exactly where this book was going.
When you start your day, what does a typical day consist of for Stephen J. Cannell, new book, Vertical Coffin, a Shane Scully novel? How many in the series?
This is the fourth.
How do you know you're going to make it a book instead of a screenplay? When you sit down to write something, how do you know it's going to be a Shane Scully, some other, a screenplay, on the basis of a TV series?
I'm looking for Shane Scully ideas all the time because I know I've got this series of novels to write. And so I'm looking for stuff that I think is going to be very interesting for him, you know, and if I got a great idea, I at some point thought, you know what, this isn't really such a good Shane Scully, it's a better feature, then I would put it aside and write it as a feature or try and sell it as a feature. But basically, I know what I'm doing, and I know when I'm looking at the LAPD that I'm probably looking at Shane Scully. And right now, for instance, I'm a third of the way through a novel called Uncommon Occurrence, which is about the LAPD anti-terrorist division. And
I was just going to ask you, because I'm thinking the terrorism has to figure into something that you're going to do.
Well, it's not Arab terrorism, because I am very bored with Arab terrorists as characters. You know, they tend to be humorless, sort of, fanatical type of people that I don't find very interesting. And so even though they're dangerous and terrifying, I don't find them interesting as characters, so I don't want to write about them.
Why? So, because they're too
fanatics.
Stereotypical as a villain,
they're
and
fanatics.
Too fanatics. Two-dimensional.
They have no humor. They are fanatics. They are, they are killing for God. They are, you know, they are not people who I find to be very multifaceted or interesting. And that's just me. That's my take on them. So, but anti-terrorist division of the LAPD works on all kinds of stuff, from Russian crime to, you know, everything, and they're basically dealing with all the embassies in L.A., and so I'm dealing with something that surrounds the whole terrorist, you know, theme, but doesn't actually deal with Arab terrorists. So it's a fascinating story, and right now I'm sort of hanging with the anti-terrorist task force. There's a guy down there named Lieutenant Berkovici who's been really kind enough to let me kind of see what's going on in that division, and that's what I'm doing.
And what have you learned?
Lots. Like, I found out that they're breaking up terrorist cells in Los Angeles and in other police station police departments around the country in very interesting ways. They are, they're looking at these terrorists. They set up on them, and with huge surveillance teams with like 8 and 9 guys in Suburbans and different kinds of cars and everything, and they'll set up on one person. They have an intelligence arm of their division, which basically is a computer division. They basically look at everything on the computer, try and find out everything about a character that they can, his arrest record, his banking record, everything, who he's in business with, who he talks to, da-da-da. Then once they get all of that together, then the surveillance team goes on them. They have like 8 or 9 surveillance teams. They're colored, like the gray team, the green team, the red team. And they'll send out, let's say, the gray team, and they'll set up on a particular individual for 2 or 3 nights and days. And what they're basically looking for is anything that this person is doing that's illegal, that they can get a warrant to arrest them on. Might be that he's consorting with a felon and he's already been arrested once and can't consort with a felon. It might be that he's buying illegal weapons. It might be, it might be something that they don't even really have enough to get a DA to prosecute, but they have enough to get a judge to write an arrest warrant. So then what they'll do is they'll arrest this character and bring him in. And they may never even file charges against him. But what they have found out is that once they arrest any terrorist, Al-Qaeda will have nothing more to do with them. It's like they're
marked
dirty forever.
How do they know that?
They just found it out, through their intelligence sources, because these guys are so frightened that once... one of their cell
Once
members
come under official scrutiny.
That they're going to roll, and they're going to give up information about the rest of the cell, and so they just broom them off. And so what they end up doing is they strip these cells down to where they're not functioning anymore because they don't have enough people, and so they're basically in the recruitment business, not in the blowing up bridges business, and they're trying to fill out their numbers so that they can. Then go and
how reliable though is their initial information that somebody is actually a member? Somebody is potentially a terrorist or a member of a cell, because there's been a lot of controversy about that.
I suppose it's as reliable as any information. A lot of it comes from informants. A lot of it comes from from surveillance. Some of it comes from wiretaps.
I mean, because you can make the case going backward that the reason they haven't turned into a terrorist isn't only because Al-Qaeda is afraid that they'll roll over. It's that they may never have been associated with a terrorist cell. They may have been dimed by somebody who hated them and was carrying a grudge.
Exactly. And then if you arrest them and kick them loose, it doesn't hurt anything.
Right.
But if they're Al-Qaeda, it removes them from the cell. So, it is... That's one of the things they're doing, and they were doing many other things. But I found that very interesting, because there's a much lower bar for writing an arrest warrant than there is for filing a case, for the district attorney filing a case. The district attorney won't file a case unless he's got basically a 99% chance of winning it, whereas a judge will write an arrest warrant if there's just a good probable cause for an arrest.
My guest, Stephen J. Cannell, new book, Vertical Coffin, a Shane Scully novel, a fast and furious read, says the Los Angeles Times about a previous book. He's going to be at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC.
Say it.
You're absolutely correct.
Don't spray it. AM 1150 KNRC.
Are you tired of high monthly house payments? Are you ready to take advantage of interest rates as low as 3.25%? Then call Western State Mortgage at 303-754-4911 and get a loan package that is custom tailored to your needs and lower your payment by hundreds of dollars per month. Get the best rate available at the best price possible. Start your 2004 with a financing solution from Western State Mortgage. Whether it's debt consolidation or home refinancing, Western State Mortgage supports independent radio right here in Denver and Colorado. Call and mention this ad, and Western State Mortgage will donate $250 to the National Multiple Sclerosis Society. Western State Mortgage will guarantee your experience will be positive. So start your 2004 off right and call them now at 303-754-4911 or visit the website at www.westernstatemortgage.com to get your free rate quote and good faith estimate. That number is 303-754-4911. Western State Mortgage, your local refinance partner.
AM 1150 KNRC features more in-depth reporting than any other Denver talk station. Our in-depth reports have been recognized by the Colorado Broadcasters Association and the Associated Press for 4 awards of excellence. Hear in-depth reports from award-winning KNRC reporters Mark Roberts and Stacey Farr during the Greg Dobbs Morning Show or anytime at knrcradio.com, where you can click it and own it. Denver's in-depth talk station, AM 1150 KNRC.
10 years ago, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
Lionel, would you join me every weeknight from 9 to midnight here on AM 1150 KNRC? Now back to Enid Goldstein.
223, the A-Team, the creator of it, right here in the studio, Stephen J. Cannell, new book, Vertical Coffin. He'll be at Tatter Cover Cherry Creek tonight, 7:30. How did you come up with the title, Vertical Coffin? What's the meaning?
It's what SWAT teams refer to as doorways. You're most vulnerable to gunfire when you go through a doorway, and so they refer to doorways as vertical coffins. When I was doing my SWAT research, I one of these guys said, oh yeah, that guy, you know, it was really too bad he caught it in a vertical coffin. I went, what's that? And he goes, that's a doorway.
You know what a transfer tube is?
A what?
A transfer tube.
I don't know, no.
What used to be called body bags when they came back from Vietnam.
Transfer tubes, yeah.
No more. Transfer tubes have been immediately eliminated. They're not, or body bags, they're now called transfer tubes.
Yeah,
and no one's
yeah.
allowed to see them. So these are vertical coffins, doorways.
Doorways.
That's where you're most vulnerable.
Yes, to gunfire.
And what can you do to protect yourself?
Be careful going through them.
Yeah. Walk away. Don't knock. We were talking in the break. I was making the observation because I've just come back from Europe that the security coming to the United States is just, it's really grisly, and I think there's a lot of resentment on the part of airline personnel in Europe and foreign countries generally about having to process in the way that the U.S. is demanding. Otherwise, they will revoke the landing rights of certain of carriers who won't conform. And you were saying that this isn't a problem for you because...
Well, I don't fly commercially. I have my own plane, my own jet. And it is much more relaxed getting in and out in a private jet than
well, and
is.
It's a hole in the system.
Yeah, conceivably.
I mean, Osama bin Laden could have his own private jet or could finance one.
Yeah, or rent one,
what and you fly in? What happens when you're flying in on a private jet?
You land, and you're subject to all the other. You're on the radar scope, and you're vectored in just like a regular commercial jet. And then you land, and you taxi to a FBO, which is a flight-based organization. It's basically a private jet terminal. And if you're coming in from on an international flight from Europe, then you have to go to the customs shed first. And basically, customs comes out and immigration comes out and they
come out to you.
They come out to you. But they also, all planes have histories. Did you know this?
No, tell me.
Planes have histories.
Because ships should have histories, but they turn them into ghost ships and then they don't have histories.
Yeah. Well, planes all have histories and, they can punch out my tail number and it will go back to everybody that's ever owned that airplane. And this has been very helpful for the customs and DEA on drugs because what they found out that was a lot of planes were sold from one drug dealer to another. I felt my plane got a little hot, so I'll sell it to you, not telling you, hey, we're getting buzzed a lot here. And then you use it and you paint it and you change the tail number. And, You know, but it always has to be registered. So,
in other words, even if you change the tail number, they can still has a history.
You change the tail number, but that has to be registered, the new tail number, and so they can go back and they say, well, you know, this plane has been passed around from one drug. So every time you land, they're going to tear all the paneling out of your plane because they think it's a drug plane. So there are histories that, so they kind of know who's aboard. Before you ever sit down, they know who's aboard.
Yeah, but can't you fake the tail number and so that they don't have history of the previous? If these are drug dealers, they can get all kinds of forged documents.
Yeah, you can, but you know what I mean? Why would you do that? I mean, if you were going to use a plane for a terrorist event, you'd never land. You'd just fly it into a building or a bridge or wherever you're going to fly it. You know?
So conceivably, somebody like Osama bin Laden or somebody in Al-Qaeda who has the means to rent a plane, they could take a private jet and fly it into some building.
Yeah.
And
That's that.
And no provision to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, I mean, they're tightening it up some, but I mean, you know, if
so, why bother with a passenger jet where a commercial jet where you're scrutinized, where you're now more heavily scrutinized? Why not just go rent one if you're a terrorist?
You probably should.
Do you think you can get a novel out of that?
we
were talking earlier, my guest, Stephen J. Kennell, the new book, Vertical Coffin. We were talking earlier about writer's block, which for you doesn't exist. Please talk about that.
Well, writer's block is caused by the desire to be perfect. And a lot of writers believe that they're very, very frightened of the critical response to their work. And they're very afraid that people will read what they've written and say, this person has no talent, this person is dumb, this person shouldn't be writing. And that fear is hiding in the back of their head. And on top of that, they place this desire to be, or this need to be brilliant, because it's going to have to, and somewhere, you know, in their mind, they're kind of hoping that in 200 years after they die, that these words will be studied in a university.
And, well, or failing that, some sort of personal redemption.
Yeah, and so when you have all that pressure on you to try and be brilliant, and how can you write anything? You know, it's like, you know, I don't understand how anybody, and most likely what's going to happen if you're trying to be that brilliant, is that the byproduct of it isn't going to be brilliance, it's going to be pretension.
And pretension or stultified, because you're so protecting against any of the real texture coming out, because
right.
You don't want to be judged harshly, that you'll marginalize the edges.
Exactly. And it's very much in a strange way like acting, because actors who are playing it safe are never really any good. And actors have to take huge chances and hope that their director will sit there and look at it and say, you're over the edge, you're over the top, whatever it is. But don't go in safe. Don't go in playing the character right close to the bone. You know, but very often untalented actors their talent will play a character very safe, just the way it's written on the page, and not take any chances. And, you know, that's part of the interpretive job of an actor, and part of the job of a writer is to take chances with stories and with characters and push yourself and be free and not be worried about, you know, about what other people are going to say. I never for a second think about critics or my public or anybody else when I write. I don't give it a dime's worth of thought.
Did you, in the beginning,
never
did you
gave
ever?
It any thought. Never.
Having written all these books, how many books now?
10.
Having written these books, what is the lesson that surprises you most? In the writing of the books, you learn how to write books. And so each book presumably builds on the lessons you've learned in previous books. But what were the lessons that surprised you the most about writing books?
How good a tool omniscient author was. What a tremendous tool that is that we don't have in screenplays.
Describe omniscient author.
Omniscient author is the ability to go into a character's head and access his or her direct thoughts. In a teleplay or in a motion picture script, everything has to come out of a character's mouth. Everything that I'm thinking.
Unless you have a narrator.
But how many narrators? I mean, narrators are boring. I mean, to have an eye narrator talking over the, you know, and not only that, I mean, it's always the sign of a bad screenplay, to be honest with you. When you see a movie with a narration, it means that somebody went back in and tried to fix it. You know, good scripts are not written with narration. We get very good at finding ways to get characters to say things to one another that they would never say to each other. I'll give an example. You remember the scene in Jerry Maguire? Did you see Jerry Maguire?
I did.
Well, Jerry Maguire was about the sports agent played by Tom Cruise, and he's trying to cut a deal for a wide receiver who plays for the Arizona Cardinals named Tidwell, played by Cuba Gooding Jr. And they're walking out of the Arizona Stadium, and he can't make the deal. They won't pay the money that Tidwell wants. And so Jerry Maguire, who's married a woman because he married this woman because he felt guilty about it, and he sort of liked her, but he didn't really love her, and she's a great woman, and everybody loves her, but Jerry's kind of not treating her right. So he's now walking out of the stadium with Tidwell, and he's saying, "I can't get this deal." And Tidwell's going, "Show me the money, man. Show me the money. I want the money, you know." And Jerry Maguire says to Tidwell, "You know what? Why I can't get you the deal? Because you're a money player, man. You just play for your wallet. You don't have any heart. If you play with your heart, maybe I could make a deal for you, but you don't have any heart." To wit, Tidwell gets really angry at him and says, "Don't talk to me about heart. You have the most beautiful woman in the world sitting at home, and you don't pay any damn attention to her at all, and da-da-da-da-da." And all of a sudden, out comes all this material that is meant for the audience to know what Jerry Maguire has done to his wife. And it's Tidwell's observation, and it's an awkward observation. Well, how many guys would sit down and say, "Let me talk to you about how you're treating your wife," you know? I mean, it's not something you would normally do. So we find a way, as a screenwriter, we have Jerry Maguire insult Tidwell so that Tidwell now can come back on the area of heart and talk about Jerry Maguire's heart and lack of heart. And that is a screenwriting technique. Now, in a novel, you can play the same scene and they can be walking out, and I can just go into Tidwell's head if I want. I can just have, you know, Tidwell say, you know, thinking, saying, you know, he looked at his friend Jerry and realized that he shouldn't be here in Arizona, that he should be home with his wife, da-da-da-da-da, and I can say anything I want about that relationship without ever having to say it to Jerry Maguire.
And so it's a more efficient device.
A very more efficient device. And now I can say things to Jerry in the midst of this. I can say, "So how's Ann?" But now that's what we would really say, you see. "How's Ann?" "Ah, well, she's okay. Well, I'm surprised she's not with you." You know, and I play the scene in a much more realistic way, the way it would probably be played. The audience would be aware, or the reader would be aware, because I'd be running the omniscient author at the same time, you know, telling what the real thoughts are. You can do things like, you know, a character can say to a guy can say to a girl, "Gee, you look beautiful," he said, thinking she'd gained 30 pounds. You see what I'm saying? You have all of this. And if I were going to do that in a screenplay...
So you get another layer of dimension.
Get another layer of dimension. If I were going to do it in a screenplay, I'd have to say, "Gee, have you gained weight?" Well, who's going to say that, you know?
Right.
So it's a much more efficient... And when I realized how much more I could do with omniscient author, I knew that because I'd written short stories in college, but it had been a long time since I'd done it.
Are you producing any TV series right now?
No.
Why are you not doing that?
Because I don't want to.
And you don't want to because?
Because I created and produced and owned 40 television shows through my studio. And for a period of about 20 years, I was the most prolific writer of television series in the history of the medium, and still am. You know, I think I hold the record even still.
I mean, is it not satisfying? Or you did that, I did that.
Yeah, I've been there. I've been
I don't want to have to do these pitch meetings. I don't want to have to
do
it.
It isn't
with
so
networks.
Much the pitch meetings, Enid. It's like I've done it. And I don't know what I have anymore to contribute. I think there are other people who contribute more than I. You know, my thoughts are my thoughts, you know, and I sort of mind my head, you know, where it comes to television. Now, if I could come up with another show like Wise Guy, which was really different, if I could come up with another show like Stingray, which was really different, I might be lured in or tempted. Prophet was really different. A show I had on Fox got canceled after 4 episodes. You know, I might be lured back in. But you know what? I've basically done everything that I wanted to do in television with those 40 shows. I had a lot of hits, had a lot of fun, met a lot of great people. I wasn't there by myself. It wasn't like the Steve Cannell show. I mean, there were people all around me that helped me and made those shows better, actors, other writers and directors and producers and musicians and composers. And, you know, it was a very, you know, it's a very collaborative business. And you know, and so, but I had all those experiences, and I really enjoyed it, and it was great. And now I'm ready for something else. And
you're acting now.
Well, I mean, do
a little
some.
Bit
I,
for know, friends. But tell me about that. Did you? Is that relatively new for you, or were you always doing it here?
Well,
and there?
I've been doing it for about 15 or 18. No, I've been actually for a long time. The first acting job I had I get a call one day from Tom Selleck in Hawaii. And he says, I got a part I want you to play.
All right, hold that thought, because I want to hear about that. My guest, Stephen J. Cannell, his new book, Vertical Coffin. You can meet him tonight, Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek at 7:30. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live on AM 1150 KNRC. 2:37, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 42 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by Waterway Gas and Wash. A tragic rollover accident this morning on I-76 west of Fort Morgan has claimed the lives of three adults and a child. The Colorado State Patrol says the driver lost control of the GMC Yukon, overcorrected, and rolled nearly three times. 11 people were in the vehicle that's designed for only five. The seven survivors of the crash were all hospitalized. Unemployment in the state inched up 0.2% in December. The State Labor Department says unemployment in Colorado last month was 5.8%. That's the same figure as December of 2002. The leisure and hospitality industry had the most growth in jobs based on the strength of ski resort operations. Lakewood police continue looking for the third suspect in a murder that happened a week ago Saturday. Police have issued an arrest warrant for Rodney Valenzuela, charging him with first-degree murder in the death of 43-year-old Danny Monk, whose body was found behind a business at 20th and Youngfield. Police have already arrested the two other suspects. In sports, it's the Colorado Avalanche versus the Edmonton Oilers tonight at the Pepsi Center. The Avs are coming off their win over the Penguins in Pittsburgh on Saturday. When the weather gets bad, stop in a Waterway car wash for the winter protection package to help you fight off winter's evil road salt, slush, and grime. Visit today. Traffic and your exclusive Weather Channel forecast are up next. KNRC News Time is 2:38.
All right, then. The first thing we'll do is divide everyone into two groups. Those of you who travel less than once a month, please turn your volume dial counterclockwise. And might I advise you to get out more. You deserve it. The rest of you, esteemed airline pilots, flight attendants, millionaires, professional athletes, congrats, you've made the cut. And should concurrently visit locatingme.com, where you'll find a service designed to aid you and your family in an emergency. When you're away, you want your family to feel confident that they could contact you at any time. And further, that they have access to pertinent medical information from any computer in the world. LocatingMe.com does this and more. And because you're a special and unique individual, if you're not completely satisfied, return your ID cards within 30 days and your entire subscription price will be refunded. No obligation. This concludes our discussion. And homebodies, you may readjust the volume as you see fit.
Visit LocatingMe.com, where you'll never be out of touch.
KNRC News Time is 2:39. Time to go to Darren Copeland in the KNRC Traffic Center.
This traffic report brought to you by James Hardy Building. And trying to get an accident out of the way. Actually, two accidents. Evans in Colorado, so watch for that. Should be just about out of there. Have a stalled truck westbound I-70 at Peoria. Overside load, broken axle. Watch for that. That's going to be there throughout the afternoon. And strong winds both directions of Highway 93 between Boulder and Golden. Watch out for that if you're driving a high-profile vehicle. James Hardy Siding provides homeowners with the beauty of wood without the usual maintenance. Visit them on the web at jameshardy.com to learn more. That's JamesHardie.com. I'm Darren Copeland with your KNRC traffic.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. The warmer temperatures are nice. The gusty winds, well, they may be a little annoying at times, but they'll calm down a little later tonight. With a mix of sun and clouds, we should top out around 43 for the high today. Cloudier tonight with a low of 24. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 50. And partly cloudy and low 50s on Thursday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
It's mostly sunny, 42 degrees. KNRC News Time is 2:41. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
I'm Enid Goldstein. Get up close and personal with the Colorado Symphony in the only concert hall in America where the music literally becomes the center of attraction. The CSO is offering KNRC listeners 20% off tickets in the Parquet and Mezzanine 1 sections of Betcher Concert Hall for all Masterworks and Super Pops performances. These seats put you practically in the middle of the orchestra. You can watch the conductor's every move and hear the majesty and force of the music build before you.
Join the Colorado Symphony Orchestra.
Orchestra and Principal Pops conductor Doc Severinsen on January 30th and 31st for a celebration of the 20th anniversary of the CSO Chorus in a program including Pops, Jazz, and Broadway. Tickets available at all King Soopers Tickets West outlets and online at www.coloradosymphony.org.
And to get up close and personal with the CSO, call 303-893-4100. That's 303-893-4100.
KNRC Market Watch.
Wall Street's major indexes took a step back after yesterday's big rally. Not helping matters, a consumer confidence report, which despite hitting an 18-month high, was still weaker than expected. The Dow Industrials lost 93 points to 10,610. The NASDAQ fell 38 points to 2116. The S&P 500 slid 11 points to 1144. Big board volume was 1.6 billion shares. Decliners beat advancers by roughly 9-7 margin. Caterpillar helped dig a hole for the Dow today. It was the index's worst percentage performer, sliding 3%. Despite topping quarterly profit estimates, fellow Dow stock DuPont beat estimates too and raised its outlook, but it fell 50 cents. Another Dow member, SBC Communications, matched estimates, stock down 74 cents. And Novellus Systems weighed heavily on the tech sector, sinking 14.5% after a weak profit outlook. I'm Steve Orr from the newsroom at MarketWatch.com.
Our contact number, 303-382-1150.
We hear you.
303-382-1150. Close is your phone. 303-382-1150. KNRC.
2:43 on the Lucky Tuesday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and with me in studio, Stephen J. Cannell and his new book, Vertical Coffin. It's a Shane Scully novel. Deliciously written. He'll be at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. And when we last left each other, he was embarking on his acting career. So this is somebody who has had a huge production studio, who has had many, many hit TV series, and who has written hit, you know, blockbuster novels, and now embarking on an acting career, which began about 15 to 18 years ago. How did it happen?
Well, I got this call from Tom Selleck, who asked me to come over to Hawaii and play a part for him in an episode of Magnum.
Was he just trying to flatter you? Why did he call you?
No, he's my friend, oh. You know. And I think what happened was Jilly, who he's now married to, had said, either marry me or I'm getting off this island. And he went, well, I'm not ready to get married. And she left. And so he needed somebody to hang with. So he calls me up. And he offers me this part, and I was playing a hotel detective in this episode. So I go over, and I thought, well, you know, how good is this? I get to go to Hawaii, I get to stay at the Outrigger Club, you know, it's like, it's great, you know, and acting, I've never acted in anything before, and I said, you know, but I know I can do it, I've seen people do it, I've been producing shows for years, you know. So I get over there, and I learn my lines, and I go to the set, and all my scenes are with Tom, and I'm playing the scenes, and he and I are buddies and everything, and I'm thinking, boy, am I hooking into this? I mean, I thought I was like just drilling it, you know. And I thought, God, I went home. Remember that night, thinking I may be one of the great undiscovered acting talents, you know. And I was like so proud of myself at that. Well, I know that they're back at the office just saying, "Oh, this guy is amazing," you know. Well, I see this episode that I shot, and I am simply horrible in this thing. I mean, I'm overacting, I'm too big, I'm all over the road, you know, and I mean, I can see they're cutting around me, you know, because everything's on Tom and very little of it's on me, and you know, it's like, and I'm thinking, okay, well, that's it. I'll never work again, you know. Melvin Van Peebles, who is a great African-American director, calls me, and Mario Van Peebles is a really dear friend of mine, and I had him as a star in Sonny Spoon, an NBC series, and I'd met Melvin through Mario, and Melvin calls me up and gives me a part in a movie he was shooting in New York called Identity Crisis. So I did that, you know, and I wasn't very good in that. And then I get offered a part in...
But you must have been better than you thought.
Well,
you were invited to a second...
But these are my friends. These are my friends. You know, these guys wanted to, hey, come on, we'll have dinner, you know. You do a little acting.
Yeah, but
we'll
they're your friends, but their careers are on the line,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, these were not big parts. This was not like... So then I get... you know, I get offered, Bob Conrad's a really good friend of mine, and he was doing a movie in Florida, and he asked me to come down and play a heavy for him, a second heavy, you know, again, not a very big part. And each time I did it, I kept thinking, well, I'm really doing this good this time, you know, and then I'd see it, and I was unhappy. And it went on like that, I did a movie.
Did you take any acting?
No, because I didn't have time. I was running a studio. I had 6 hours of television on the air. You know, it was like I didn't have time to go to acting class, you know. And I wasn't really pursuing an acting career, but these people would. So now what happens is, and then Mario hires me, Mario Van Peebles hires me to be in Posse, a picture that he was doing for Gramercy Picture that he was directing and starring in. So I did that, and I guess I was okay in that. I played a character named Jimmy Love, and I, you know. So now I'm thinking, you know, this career is really kind of over. And we were casting Renegade, which was one of my shows, and Lorenzo Lamas was the star of that show. And we had a character that was going to be a recurring character called Dutch Dixon. And he was this kind of evil cop from a city called Bay City in California, and he had framed Lorenzo's character for murder, and that's why Lorenzo was on the run and was a fugitive. And the idea was that this character would appear 5 or 6 times a year in an important episode where he would almost catch Lorenzo and for murder, that Dutch Dixon had committed the murder. And so the distributor's in my office, and we're bringing actors in, and they're reading it was my script, and they're reading the script, and the distributor's turning everybody. There was a couple of guys that I would have hired that the distributor didn't want. So finally, at the end of the day, Lorenzo goes, "Hey, Steve, why don't you play this guy?" And I said, "Lorenz, have you ever seen any of this junk I've been doing?" I said, I'm not very good. And he goes, "Yeah, I've seen 2 or 3 things." And he said, "I'll tell you something. You know what your problem is? You're always rusty. You never get enough work to get the rust off." And he said, "You know, come on down and play this character, and we'll have a good time." And the distributor pipes up, and he goes, "I'll sign off on that." And it was the end of the day, and I I'm a ham anyway, you know. So I said, "Okay, we'll try it. And then if I don't do a good job, then we got to replace me. You know, I'll die, and I'll give the information to my best friend, and you know, he'll be the heavy." And you know, so I go down there, and for 5 years, I played Dutch Dixon on Renegade, and I kind of learned to act at the expense of my Renegade audience, and I got some really good part. I mean, I had scenes where it was just Lorenzo and me for the whole show, you know, I mean, you know, for 1 hour, and it was just really got a chance to stretch and learn to do things. I had scenes where I had a breakdown in a psychiatrist's office and cry, and, you know, things for me as an actor that were not normal.
How do you get yourself to cry?
Well,
when you have to do it on cue.
You know, to begin with, a lot of it's in, there's a thing called sense memory in acting, and I'm not very good at sense memory, but I can do some of it. Is breathing. I also lost a son when he was 15 and a half, and I can go there. But it was really, you know, I learned a lot about, I mean, I got very comfortable. I got out of my technique problems, you know. There's a lot of technique in film acting. There isn't all acting, but there's more in a strange way in film acting, because there's all these things that are happening on the set while you're trying to do your part.
For example?
Well, there's a key light. You and I are playing a scene together, and the key light is on you, and there's a key light on me. And as I move into my position, if I'm not exactly in the right place, I'm going to shadow you, because I'm going to get in your key light, and I'm going to throw my shadow on your face, and your face isn't going to be photographed. It's going to have a big black spot in it from my shadow. So now the DP comes over and says, "Steve, when you get in there, you got to move your shoulder slightly to the right. So you come in, you pivot right, because you got to clear that light." And then somebody else says something else, you know, "We're not, you know, when you set down that, you know, that glass, you know, we're not seeing it, it's too low, you've got to hold it out slightly," and, you know, all of these little tiny things that have to do with getting it on film.
Right, but which feel artificial.
Very artificial, and so you're sitting there and you're saying, and you can see it on a young actor's face. This is what was happening on the first shows. You know, like I was trying to clear the lighting, you could see on my face, because the camera really reads everything. You could see that little moment of blankness where I was going, "Oh, shoulder," you know, and
hand
that
extended.
Wasn't hand extended higher, and so it wasn't like it didn't. I mean,
it doesn't feel natural.
And I wasn't connecting with the character I was playing, so I was.
You're too busy thinking about the mechanical things that
you
had to do.
I was acting. You know, it was like I wasn't being the guy. I was trying to be the guy. It's a completely different thing. So I learned when I kind of had to teach myself on the set, but I mean, it isn't like it's, so I would learn when they say to me, "You got to turn your shoulder," I would make it part of my character. So instead of saying, "I'm turning my shoulder for the light," I would think, "I'm going to throw my finger kind of slightly in her face." So that's going to turn me around. So I'm going to go, hey. And that's now it's performance, because I'm throwing my finger at you and I'm basically turning my shoulder away from the light as I'm doing it. And it becomes part of my anger now. And I just lock into that motion, and I know that that's what I'm going to do when I perform that scene.
So you start
to like use all these things as part of the performance, and build them into the performance so that they don't become mechanical kind of things that separate you from your character. Now, you know, there are a lot of other things that have to do with it too. But
what do you like about acting? That's different from the writing. This sitting down and writing is a more interior process.
Well,
which is why I have trouble doing it. Because talk radio is very exterior, you're amping it out. Writing is very interior. Do you like acting because it uses muscles that writing doesn't, and then you put it together and it's a broader picture for you?
In it uses the same muscles. That's what's interesting about it. I am all the characters in my plays and in my books, in my scripts and my books. I become Shane Scully. I become Alexa Scully, his wife. I become everybody, you know, and I have to take on the clothes of that character and the feelings and emotions that I have said that character now has at this point in the play, and I have to now, from inside me, I have to come out with the lines that character is going to say with those feelings, and so that's basically an improv, and so it's the same kind of thing that I have to do as an actor. What I also like about it is that there's a lot of social interacting in acting. I get to, you know, it's the greatest thing, you know, you practice your lines and you sort of know how do you,
is it hard to memorize them at a certain point? A lot of actors sometimes work with earpieces.
You mean to have people read the lines to them?
Yeah,
no, I would never do that because I think that would make you more mechanical. But I have to work with a tape recorder to learn my lines because of my dyslexia. It's very hard for me to memorize. But once I've memorized, I never need my script at the set. I go without the script. I know everything before I ever get to the set. But then, you know, you'll sort of think you know how you want to play something, and in your mind, you think that the actor you're playing it against is going to be angry, and so all of your responses, because it's an angry scene, all of your responses are kind of based on your thought that what's coming at you is anger. And even when I've read it into my tape recorder, I've sort of put a little anger into the other actor's cue lines, you know, so now I'm going to come back with anger. And then you go, and usually before you start shooting, you'll knock on an actor's door that you're going to work a scene with, and you say, you want to run these, which is the normal, you never say you want to run lines, you want to say you want to run these. You know, that's always the expression. So, yeah, let's do it. So the other actor will come out of his or her dressing room, and we'll go find a quiet place, and we'll play our scene and sort of try and get the scene together before we ever take it to the set for the director. And then all of a sudden, the actor that I'm working with is laughing at me while they're reading the lines. They're not angry. They've got a whole nother way they're going. And I didn't count on that. But wow, does that change everything, you know? So you're going, he's laughing at me, and I'm going, oh, wait a minute. No, it's like I'm not angry. I'm a little put off. I'm a little frustrated. I'm a little, you know, hey, come on. And, you know, my line might be, hey, I'm talking to you about this, and I mean it. And I might have been planning to say it, hey, I'm talking to you about this and I mean it. That might be the way I want to do it. And now I'm going, hey, I'm talking about it, I mean it. You know, so it's a completely different performance, and that's where two actors feed off one another.
You've had an extraordinary career. I'm delighted that you could join us today. Stephen J. Cannell, you can meet him tonight at Tatter Cover Cherry Creek at 7:30. His new book, Do Yourself a Favor, Vertical Coffin. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Where Denver comes to hear both sides talk.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
AM 1150, KNRC.
Hi, I'm Evelinda Ehrman.
And I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live.
Even if you're not born with great style, you can buy it.
Just like we do. And this extends to our homes. Element, Denver's newest furniture store for urban home furnishings, accessories, and artwork, meets all our style needs and will meet yours, too.
Element has multifunctional furniture to maximize your space in a condo, apartment, loft, or smaller home. The clean lines of Element's furniture for today's urban lifestyle will work with what you already own.
You'll love their eclectic mix of styles, all presented in a way you can envision in your own home.
Prices are affordable, with lamps as low as $100 and sofas starting at about $1,000. Interior design services are available.
Element is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 6.
Saturday 10 to 7, and Sunday 1 to 5. Element is located at 77 West 9th Avenue, a half a block west of Broadway in the Golden Triangle. 303-825-3770.
Element. Your lifestyle, your home, your element.
My company designs and builds offices for large corporations. After 10 years in business, I can handle just about any construction problem. But paying my bills on time, that's not always so easy.
Introducing the American Express Platinum Business Credit Card. It lets small business owners pay over time. There's no annual fee, plus you enjoy all the savings, services, and tools of OPEN, the Small Business Network. Apply now. Call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
Paying over time? It helps me build my business.
Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.
The KNRC Community Commitments.
Over 16,000 charitable nonprofits around Colorado create and foster hope in our communities every day. These include art groups, education institutions, healthcare facilities, amateur sports clubs, and environmental agencies. Support the nonprofits that touch our lives by volunteering, participating in their activities, and donating to them. To learn more about Colorado's nonprofits, visit the Colorado Association of Nonprofit Organizations at www.canpo.org.
Today is the last day of Albertson's Buy One, Get Two Free sale. With the in-store coupon, you can save up to $103.58 in free groceries. Albertson's, helping make your life easier.
Tickets are on sale now for the 2004 KeyBank Denver Distinguished Lecture Series, featuring the dynamic lineup of retired General Tommy Franks on Tuesday, March 30th, and Steve Forbes on Monday, May 17th. Tickets are still available for these compelling speakers. For information on the remaining ticket packages, go to www.denverlectureseries.com and expand your world by attending the 2004 KeyBank Distinguished Lecture Series, a program of junior achievement and sponsored in part by AM 1150 KNRC. And now the Enid Goldstein Show continues on AM 1150 KNRC.
258, excuse me, on the welcome home from Venice. I'm shamelessly welcoming myself back from Venice. Edition of Enid Live, we just have about a minute left to go. If you're just tuning in, you missed Brian Moss today. He's got a great piece on Channel 4 at 5 o'clock tonight. Following up on his investigative piece, these police officers using cell phones to call sex chat lines, if they catch those folks, I think they need to put them up on John's TV. And you just missed Stephen J. Cannell. He'll be at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight, 7:30. It'll be a lot of fun. He's a wonderful guest, and he has had an extraordinary career. I have lots of people that I want to thank today. Joe Anderson, thank you so much for everything that you've done. Sean McKenzie, everything that you've done keeping us on the air. All of you who called and listened, we'll do again tomorrow. We've got a great guest lined up. We're going to have John and Abigail Adams. You thought they were dead? They're not. They're alive, and they'll be on Enid Live tomorrow. On Friday, Kevin Phillips, a great new book, American Dynasty, all about the Bushes and their deceit. I'll see you tomorrow, noon to 3. Doug Kellett up next on KNRC.
Hear both sides talk. AM 1150, KNRC, Englewood, Denver. Doug Kellett is straight ahead. It's 3 o'clock.
Good afternoon. Mostly sunny, 43 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin. This report brought to you by General Motors. Three adults and one child died in an accident on I-76 west of Fort Morgan this morning. Colorado State Patrol Master Trooper Ron Watkins said the mishap took place about 8 and involved a 1995 GMC Yukon.
A 1995 GMC Yukon traveling eastbound on I-76 lost control, drifted off to the left side, overcorrected, and ran off the right side of the roadway. The vehicle rolled approximately 2 3/4 times.
Watkins says even though the vehicle actually seats 5 occupants, 11 people were riding in the SUV. 7 people were hospitalized. Watkins says it's not known if the occupants of the Yukon were wearing seatbelts. The vehicle was registered to a woman from Fort Morgan. Lakewood police continue looking for the third suspect in a murder that happened a week ago Saturday. Police have issued an arrest warrant for Rodney Valenzuela, charging him with first-degree murder in the death of 43-year-old Danny Monk, whose body was found behind a business at 20th and Youngfield. Lakewood police spokesman Steve Davis describes the suspect, who remains at large.
He is 26 years old. He's a white male, Hispanic, and I believe his height was about 5'8", 100.